Blog Talk
Hello,
Radio.
Everybody. There we go. Get a little excited to come on, and all of a sudden I just start chit-chatting away, and it's like, oh, wait. Gotta wait for it to actually load. I gotta get some intro music or something in here. I'm working on that. Making that be a thing. So while we're waiting for our guest to come on tonight, if he's able to make it on tonight, we're going to start going over the super happy fun time stuff. Oh, the things that I have seen on YouTube this week, the things that I have seen. I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention to the news this week, so when we pop over to Twitter today, a lot of this is going to be new. But I did watch a video that was blowing my mind, to put it nicely, and man, all I can say is it's clown world out there right now, folks. It is clown world. I am so unbelievably taken aback that every time I log on, it's just, I don't even know. Not even gonna lie, I don't even know. Oh my goodness, is my guest here right now? Give me one second, I'll be right back. Alrighty, guys, we have our guest of the night. He's come in, he's popped in. This is my buddy, Chris Martin. He's here to chit-chat tonight about criminal cases, jurisdiction, sovereignty. This guy kicks ass, man. He's super happy, fun time, awesome, incredibly intelligent, funnier than hell. I love this guy. So, bud, what do you got for us tonight?
What's that?
What do you got for us tonight?
Oh, I don't know. I really like to start off. I don't personally do the whole sovereignty thing. I don't use that word.
Not anymore.
But well, I mean, I'm sure sovereignty exists somewhere, but it's just it's too much of a red flag for, you know, the powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to use it anymore. But what I like to generally what I get into is talking about criminal cases, because my main goal is to help people stay out of that terrible place they call jail.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, there's a lot of things that over the years I've dealt with a lot of stuff, and I've researched a lot and everything. And I eventually, a few years back, I got to the point where I had kind of reverse engineered exactly what these prosecutors and these cops and judges and stuff, how they operate, and like basically the process that they're using. Now there's, you know, there's a lot of discussion about court cases being commercial, and that to some extent is true. They are issuing securities, and there are ways to handle it, like, you know, dealing with it from that point of view. But they never talk about that. They never bring that up in court. You'll never hear about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do is do what they do, because, you know, there's one thing, it's like, look, if you can do it, I can do it. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's nothing between the parties to a court case, especially a criminal case, where they can tell you, oh, well, we have the authority to do something and you don't, because
The
flat out truth is, you know, we, the people, you know, when we did the constitutions, we wrote that when the constitutions were written, it was we the people, blah blah blah, and so there's never been really any legal kind of definition of who or what the people is. It's never been legally defined by a court decision or any kind of court cases or anything like that. Okay, But we do know one thing about the people, and that is we may not know what it's legally defined as, but we know what their position is. It's first. It's before everything else. We, the people, is whatever that is, they are first. You know, and so the people are supposed to be, quote unquote, the sovereigns. But the thing is, like, the people ordained and established the government. And they did that with the constitutions, and they basically did it all so that, what am I getting at? My mind's spinning a little fast here, so let me slow down. So basically, we granted, the people, the sovereigns, granted their public servants these authorities and limitations on them through the creation of the Constitution, okay? So basically, a king cannot grant his servants an authority that he does not first hold himself.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just, if I were king of England, I couldn't tell the cook in the kitchen to go kill some duke or baron somewhere. If I don't have the authority to kill that person, I can't tell my cook to go kill him. You know what I mean? The servants work for, they work for us. So the thing is, they can't do anything that we can't do either. They don't have any authority that we don't give them or we didn't give them. Now, when you talk to these people, their egos are so big that they can't even comprehend that, and because they think they work for the government, so they must be over you. But they're not. So back to the process of what happens in a criminal case, at least here in the United States, and this is, you know, things vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but for the most part here in the United States, what in most states, it's almost identical across the board. And that is generally, I'm going to deal with like things like victimless crimes. Okay. So say, you know, your state only allows you to have like, you know, a couple of grams of marijuana in your pocket, and you get caught with an ounce. Okay, so there's no victim there, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the state, what happens is the cop goes back, he arrests you or whatever, and then he goes back, and while you're sitting in a holding cell, he's out there writing up a probable cause affidavit. First document that ever gets created in a criminal court case is that probable cause affidavit, because they have to be able to explain to a judge or somebody that's higher than them why they arrested you. They had to have a reason, so they have to put it on paper why they did it, and that's the probable cause affidavit. Then what happens is at the end of the day, all the probable cause affidavits from all the cops that worked in that department on that shift, they get sent over or mailed over, you know, by the next day, or somebody will just carry them over to the district attorney's office. Then they got somebody, some low-level deputy district attorney that's sitting there at a desk, and he doesn't ever prosecute anything. He just goes through those probable cause affidavits, and he goes, this one's got enough probable cause in it, and this one's got enough probable cause in it, and this one's got enough probable cause in it, and this one doesn't. And so they make that decision to the ones that they consider have enough probable cause, they move up to, you know, then a prosecutor takes those and they write out a complaint, a criminal complaint. Sometimes they'll, depending on what happens, you know, what jurisdiction you're in, what will happen next is, those complaints will either go before a grand jury to get an indictment, or the district attorney will write up what's called in some districts or jurisdictions, they call it an information. Okay, so an information is basically written up by the prosecutor. The indictment is written up by a grand jury because the prosecutor had a complaint. okay? And then we go to arraignment and all that other stuff, okay? But before we even go any further with that, here's where things get crazy. I don't know, you know, I'm not sure of the level of knowledge of, you know, people listening on here and everything, but there's an old maxim that an unrebutted affidavit stands as the truth of the matters asserted. Okay, I don't know if any of you guys have heard that before or not, but it's a maxim. And the trick is, and everybody says, oh, well, the burden of proof is on the party bringing the claim. The burden of proof is on the state. The burden of proof is on the prosecutor. Yeah, but only under one condition. Because if you don't rebut that probable cause affidavit, then that probable cause affidavit stands as the unrebutted truth of the matters asserted. It basically, because you didn't respond to that affidavit with your own affidavit, rebutting all of that, then they don't really, the whole, oh, the burden of proof is on the state, doesn't really apply.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they did is they basically tricked you into agreeing with what was on the probable cause affidavit. And now they don't have to prove anything because you've already admitted to a lot of things. Whatever they said is what you admitted to. Because
yeah,
you failed
silence
to rebut that probable cause. Right. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll take 2 or 3 days to get those probable cause affidavits over to the prosecutor's office. And the reason for that is because 3 days is a commercial grace period. They know if they don't have you talking, and a lot of times they'll leave you in jail for 72 hours before they actually let you see a judge, because they basically are forcing you into default on the claims they made on their affidavit. You didn't get a chance, you didn't see it for 3 days, and so you couldn't have rebutted it. Or you were in jail for 3 days, and either way, you didn't see it, you couldn't rebut it. And then you go before the judge, and they're like, well, here's the charges, do you understand, and blah, blah, blah. Well, how am I supposed to plead anything to something that I've not seen? I have no idea. The charges stem from that probable cause affidavit. Now, an information is a little different from an indictment. Because, again, an information is generally, it's done up by the prosecuting attorney himself, and there's no grand jury. But in an indictment, when they bring that complaint before the grand jury, and the grand jury says, yeah, we believe that this person, there's enough evidence here to say that this person committed this crime, they'll issue the indictment. Well, on every indictment I've ever seen, it clearly says right at the bottom before the foreperson's signature, it'll say a true bill. If it's a true bill and there's charges on the front of it, it must be commercial. In my opinion, that's just common sense. But again, it's all started with that probable cause affidavit, and that's the thing that we need to get first and foremost if we're going to, like, beat these guys at their own game. Again, there's a lot of other ways to do it, but if you're doing it the way they do it, they can't say anything. They can't say, well, I had a judge one time tell a friend of mine, yeah, well, we don't accept affidavits from defendants. Like, well, you accepted one from the plaintiff. So what are you saying? Only plaintiff can do affidavits? Yeah. It doesn't matter. We filed the affidavit anyway. But, yeah, I mean, they'll give you all kinds of nonsense. But that's only one time I've seen that happen, or I've heard that happen. Every other time it's not been really a problem entering an affidavit of rebuttal into the court record. And what that does is it honestly evens the playing field, because now all they've got on the record are two competing affidavits. So they're back to square one when you rebut that affidavit. Now, I don't, I'm going to switch over and talk about a traffic matter, because I want to explain a little bit more in detail about rebutting these probable cause affidavits, or in that case, it's a citation. They don't generally write up a probable cause affidavit for a traffic ticket, but the citation is generally considered a probable cause affidavit, and it does have language on it to ensure that the court can recognize it as an affidavit, even though it doesn't say that on it. They sneak around with their forms and their titles, but that's what they're doing. So when rebutting the probable cause, say a guy writes you a cop that pulls you over, writes you a ticket for driving without a license, going 65 in a 45, and failing to signal. Okay? You don't want to go and rebut that thing by going, I wasn't driving without a license, and I did signal, and I wasn't going 65 in a 45. You don't, that's not how you rebut it. The way you look at things like that is you say, yep, I was going 65 in a 45. That is absolutely true. And by admitting to that fact, you're remaining in honor, because you're not lying to anybody. You're not trying to deceive anybody. You're admitting to the fact, yes, I was doing 65 in a 45. And you admit to the fact that I did not signal. Now, here's the tricky part. You get into the whole driving without a license thing. Well, I wasn't driving. I was traveling. But the cop never did any kind of investigation to determine whether or not I was operating that automobile in commerce or not. So he can't say that you were driving. And if you weren't driving, you don't need a license. Right, so there's some things there you want to admit to the facts in your affidavits when you're rebutting them. You want to agree with and admit as much as possible about what they're saying. Anything that they're saying that's not, you can't agree with, you can't say I was driving without a license. You can say I admit that I don't have a license, but I wasn't operating in commerce. Now, here's a thing that a buddy of mine did years ago in Georgia. He got pulled over. He's from South Carolina. He got pulled over in Georgia. He got basically the same thing. He got a ticket for driving, say, 50 and a 35 and driving without a license. Well, he goes to court, and because I guess he didn't have time to do his paperwork beforehand or whatever. He goes to court. And he tells the judge, he says, look, I don't see what the problem here is. He says, I'll gladly admit I was going 50 and a 35. He says, but it states right here on the ticket, the cop verified that I don't have a license. So if I don't have a license, then I have no contract with the state that requires me to do 35 in a 35. In other words, I could not have been, even though I was doing 50 and a 35, I could not have been speeding, because speeding would indicate that I was under contract. Mm-hmm. And the judge literally threw the case out and dismissed it. He said, well, you're right. You can't be charged with driving 60 or 50 and a 35 if you don't have a license. And he threw the whole thing out. He dismissed it. Go ahead. Were you going to say something, Sam?
Oh, I just said nice. I was like, yeah, that whole no contract, no commerce thing worked really, really well.
It really does. You know, and then, you know, the first thing that people need to understand is, you know, when you go in there, the first thing that you want to do, and kind of by rebutting that probable cause, you are performing an act toward this end, which is you want to challenge jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to challenge jurisdiction. You want to challenge subject matter jurisdiction, and you want to challenge personal jurisdiction. Well, personal jurisdiction, you know, that really gets tricky because the state is not charging you. They're charging the thing that they created. They're charging the person they created, which is that birth certificate, right? That thing belongs to them. They made it. They own it. But we were not, you know, we were not born from the state. The state was not our mom or our dad. We were born to living human beings, and we are living human beings. So, you know, that's just a tidbit there. But the subject matter jurisdiction is where, you know, you can get in there and say basically whatever you want. It's like, you know, look, the state is a legal fiction. It has no tangibility in the real world. So it cannot suffer injury because it's not an animal. It's not a human. It cannot suffer damage because it's not a car. It's not a fence. It's just an intangible legal fiction. So the only thing, without an injured party or damage to property, the only thing that they have any reason to get any to do anything to anybody is breach of contract. Because in the United States, under the Constitution, we have two different jurisdictions listed, common law and admiralty. Common law jurisdiction only consists of two crimes, injury to person or damage to property. That's the only crimes under common law. And the only crime under admiralty is breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say you violated the statutes, they're saying you breached a contract.
Mm.
But how can I, as a living man, have a contract? I mean, like, can you prove that I ever had a contract with the state?
Mm-hmm.
No, they can't. You know, and they ask you all these stupid questions when you get in there. The judge likes to say, you know, the two questions that they always ask you are you so-and-so, and do you understand the charges? If you answer yes to both of those, you just gave them personal jurisdiction because you admitted to being the defendant, and you gave them subject matter jurisdiction because you admitted to understanding the charges.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's tricky. They're not telling you that that's what they're doing, but that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're establishing subject matter jurisdiction, and they're establishing personal jurisdiction. And then, it's crazy. You know, and then they like to throw you off, you know, if you start talking and you know what you're talking about and you know how to deal with these guys, they'll start throwing you off with things like, well, you know, what's your birthday? Or is your birthday such and such? And they'll read it off the paperwork, you know, and so they'll start tricking you that way, because how am I supposed to testify as to what my birthday is?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I was an absolute incompetent minor the day I was born. I have no ability to competently testify to what my birthday is. I can give you hearsay, which is what my mom and dad told me it was, but again, that's hearsay. I can't tell you what my birthday is. I can only tell you what other people told me it was. So they try to get you to testify to facts that you have no competent way of knowing. And that's how they prove that you're incompetent. So if you start giving them hell on the, do you understand the charges and are you so-and-so, if you know what you're doing and you're giving them hell, they'll back off and they'll ask you a stupid question like, you know, well, is this your birthday? Or what's your social security number? Or, you know, something like that. Well, I don't have a social security number. The government has one. I don't have a social security administration. I just have me. You know, that the SSA, they're part of the government. So they issued the number. They're the ones that have the number. I don't know anything about that. I don't have one, you know, or, you know, your birthday, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I like to bring up is everybody has watched a cop show at some point in their life, whether you watch TV or not, you've seen them on YouTube, Facebook, there's cop stuff everywhere. And everybody that's seen one of those by now knows you have the right to remain silent. Everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. I personally like that second one. I like it a lot. Everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Because that is a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
So when these prosecutors start talking, I let them talk. I don't interrupt them at all. I let them say whatever they feel like saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I take little mental notes, or I'll write down little notes on the paper, whatever that I've got available, and I'm like, okay, they said that, they said that, and they said that. I'm not letting them go back on that because they just stuck themselves in a corner. They said, well, yeah, this guy was speeding. Oh, well, okay, I'm sorry. Are you and now you're offering testimony. You can't prosecute me. I'm going to call you as a witness. Because now you have to prove that I'm an intangible legal fiction, just like your client, the alleged plaintiff, the state of whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just throw them back on that.
Mm.
But I think that main thing to do really is to get in there, learn how to write an affidavit. There's a good way and a okay way and a really terrible way to write an affidavit. In my opinion, the good way is each point should make one fact, and you try not to make them complicated. You know what I mean? You try to keep each fact simple and separate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I like to do is whatever is in their probable cause affidavit, if I have a sentence or a statement that I disagree with, I will go to that statement and I will say, affiant, who is me or whoever's writing the affidavit, affiant sees no evidence to support the fact that, and then write down whatever fact they put in, and then at the end of that say, and denies such evidence exists. Or you can say, affiant sees no evidence to rebut the fact that blah, 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 and denies such evidence exists. So you're saying, I don't see any evidence to support or rebut a particular thing that this person said, but I'm denying that any evidence of its support or its rebuttal exists. So now what you're doing is you're forcing them into a corner because they put their affidavit out there. They can't go back and change their affidavit. So the only thing that's left for them to do after you rebut their affidavit is for them to bring evidence that supports or rebuts what you said. Because the paperwork's over. They did their little, they made their statement and they wrote it down, and I made my statement and I wrote it down. My statement, everything in my statement says I don't see anything to, I don't see any evidence to support this fact. And I deny it exists. So now the only, you can't go back and say, well, we have this evidence and this evidence. No, you just bring it at that point. You just bring the evidence. And, you're basically like you're bypassing the discovery phase of a trial altogether. Like just in rebutting their probable cause affidavit in that form, you're totally bypassing any need for discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Because the discovery is now. It's not after arraignment. It's not after this or that or pretrial. No, there is nothing. It's now. You bring it forward now because you said this, but you can't prove it, and you didn't provide any evidence, and now you have to bring evidence. So, I mean, it speeds things up and gets a lot of nastiness out of the way. And all you have to do is tell them on your affidavit, this is what I know. These are facts. Now, you can use the word I believe, but I generally, if I have something that I believe and I'm not sure about it, I'll kind of take that and I'll write it down on a different piece of paper. I won't put it in my affidavit. And the reason I do that is because I don't like putting anything in there that I don't know. Because every single one of those cops or those prosecutors, they always, their paperwork almost always says, based on information and belief, there'll be that statement before their signature at the bottom. Okay, so theirs is based on information, wherever they and whoever they got that from, and their belief. So whatever information they got, they're saying they believe it. They're not saying it's a fact. They're not saying it's true. They're just saying that they believe it to be true. Based on information that they obtained from somewhere else. Because 9 times out of 10, that cop wasn't there when something happened. The cops show up later, you know? They can't say you kicked that dog. They can say based on information and belief, I believe he kicked that dog. Because the neighbors said that they saw him kick that dog, and I believe the neighbors. Well, what if the neighbor's lying? What if I never touched the dog?
Yeah, wouldn't that be hearsay? Like, technically what they're bringing then is hearsay, wouldn't it be?
Right, that's their information. Right? If they were just informed by your neighbor that you kicked a dog. They never saw you kick the dog. The neighbor might have never seen you kick the dog because you didn't kick the dog. So why are you, you know, you can believe the information that you got, but I'm going to sit here and tell you right now it's not true. I never kicked a dog. I've seen no evidence to support the fact that I kicked a dog. Is there evidence to support the fact that my neighbor said I kicked a dog? Sure. My neighbor probably came over and was like, I reported you to the cop for kicking a dog, even though I never kicked a dog. Well, okay, so I know that my neighbors think I kicked a dog or said I kicked a dog. I'm not going to deny that fact, but I will deny the fact that I see no evidence to support the fact that I kicked a dog. And, you know, you can go back to the neighbors and get their hearsay all day long, but unless they have pictures of me kicking a dog that I didn't kick, then you're not going to be able to provide evidence that I kicked a dog. So I see no evidence to support the fact that I kicked a dog and deny such evidence exists. All right. So now your information and belief is fine, but now you got to prove it, which you can't. All you can do is bring a liar into court to say that I did something, but again, even that liar doesn't have a picture of me kicking a dog, so there's no evidence. It's hearsay. I don't care if they're under oath or not. I didn't ask for testimony. I asked for evidence. Where's the evidence? Testimony is not evidence. So, I don't know, man. That's my main thing is just really just, you know, rebutting those probable cause affidavits is really, it's really a good way to go. And then you challenge jurisdiction because you're like, well, if they don't bring evidence to support or rebut everything that I've said in my affidavit, then there's no justiciable controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do the courts have jurisdiction over? They have jurisdiction over controversies and disputes. But if you can't bring evidence, there's no controversy. I'm right, period. There's no argument. So now the court just lost jurisdiction. They lost subject matter jurisdiction for what they call failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. You don't have any evidence that your claim is worth the paper it's written on.
Mm-hmm.
So you rebut the probable cause affidavit. You do it in a way that questions them about things, you know, and creates, like, the immediate need for discovery. And then you walk, if you have to, you walk into court and you say, look, there's no justiciable controversy here. They made claims. I rebutted their claims. I'm here with evidence to support my claims, and they're not here with any evidence to support their claims.
Mm-hmm.
So now I am 100% what they call in honor, right? Because I said what I needed. You know, I rebutted the probable cause. You know, I exhausted my administrative remedies. I said, look, if you can bring claim of damages, you know, damages, injury, or breach, if you can bring evidence of that, then I will make you whole. It's my job as an honorable person to create remedy if there's an issue between me and my brother. But this isn't an issue between me and my brother. This is an issue between me and my brother's client. Prosecutor's my brother. He's a human being. His client, on the other hand, doesn't freaking exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any issues with his client. Why would I?
Mm-hmm.
My position is that over the client. I came before your client.
Mm-hmm.
So if your client can prove breach, and then after they prove breach, they have to prove that there was some form of monetary or damage value to that breach. And they can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suppose if they were, say, in the marijuana case, say, you know, they were able to prove breach because they tricked you into admitting that you were the person or the defendant or whatever, and somehow, yeah, then they can prove breach because you admitted to being the defendant. Okay. But they still can't prove damages other than to say, maybe at that point they would say, well, since you did have a contract with us, our damages consist of loss of tax revenue.
Mm.
You know, we have a business to run and we need to tax people. And when you go and buy that much marijuana, you know, being a defendant, you're losing us tax money. You know, I mean, but again, it's not a crime. The actual damages to their thing was not because you had an ounce of marijuana when you're only supposed to have 5 grams. The damages were they lost. It was a breach of contract. It was a tax issue. They lost tax revenue. So why aren't you charging me with a loss of tax revenue instead of charging me with a damn marijuana thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know. Again, then their complaint is all based on the wrong stuff, the wrong subject matter. And if I ever did get tricked into something like that, that's what I would immediately go back and say, well, they brought the wrong charges. They clearly just admitted it was a tax issue, which is now civil,
yep.
By the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're good here. Right, we're in the wrong court. There's no crime here. It's a civil matter, loss of tax revenue. And I still want this dismissed because they brought the wrong claim. And that failure to state a claim thing, that's a really good one. failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. It's an automatic reversible error on appeal to bring a claim where relief cannot be granted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when they're like, I mean, anytime you've got that, you know, here's the thing in traffic court, right? I don't do traffic court. I don't deal with it. I've never had this issue, but I've thought about this and I wish somebody would try it because just for kicks and grins, it'd be fun to see what happens. But, you know, the next time somebody's in traffic court and they get, you know, they got a $150 ticket for doing, you know, 60 and a 45, I would look at the prosecutor and just ask him, do you think that if I pay this $150 to the court, it will stop me from doing 60 and a 45? And, you know, if the prosecutor's got one hint of honesty in his bones, he's going to look at you and go, no, I really don't think that'll stop you from doing it again at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you're stating a claim, but there's nothing can be done to grant relief. You just admitted that. You just admitted that even if I pay $150, it's not going to grant the relief because you don't think it's going to stop me from doing 60 and a 45 again. And you're probably right. Mm-hmm. It won't. It won't stop me from doing 60 through there.
Mm-hmm.
But now then you just move the, you know, ask the judge, you know, I want an order of dismissal for failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. The prosecutor clearly just said he does not believe that if I pay this $150, it will stop me from doing that again. So what's his game? Why is he even bothering? If nothing this court is going to order is going to stop me from doing it again, then what's the point in creating an order?
Mm-hmm.
Order me to pay $150. I don't care. And then get the cop to follow me back through that same thing and watch me do 60 and a 45 right after court just to do it on purpose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was arrested once on some drug charges for mushrooms, and it was I had a pretty good amount. I think I had about 3 pounds of mushrooms on me. And I got arrested in one county in a state. And then while I was out on bail, this is when I was really new to this and I was still learning. While I was out on bail, I got busted in another county in that same state with another pound of mushrooms. It was like maybe 2 months later and maybe 2 hours up the road. Well, the second court, I went in there and the judge was reading the charges and all this stuff, and she goes, wait a minute, it looks like you were just arrested for this in this other county a couple of months ago. And she goes, so do you understand the charges? And I just looked at her and I said, obviously not. Man, you really want to tick these people off? Be honest with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I understood, why, I probably wouldn't have done it again. But obviously I don't. Mm-hmm. Because I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep running around this state with pounds of mushrooms. Because that's what I do. You know, like, at the time, I was just like, that's what I do. So, yeah, no, I don't understand anything. No, I don't get it. Well, I don't understand why you took, you know, $1,500 worth of mushrooms off me, you know, or $4,500 worth of mushrooms off me, and then a couple months later you take another $1,500 worth of mushrooms off me, and now you want me to give you my time and labor and money on top of all that? You just took everything, you know, you took so much away from me already.
Yeah.
No, I don't get it. Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, they don't like it when you're honest with them, and that's the other thing, too. They'll ask you, do you understand the charges? What they're not clearly articulating is what they mean, which is, do you understand the nature and cause of the charges?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. It's a 100% reversible error on appeal to try someone and convict them if they don't understand the nature and cause of the charges. So what are the nature of the charges? Again, is this because my mushroom? I didn't throw a bag of mushrooms at somebody and hurt them. You know, is it a loss of tax revenue? I don't understand the nature of this charge at all. And I don't understand the cause because I have the right to do whatever I want so long as I'm not injuring people, damaging property, or breaching contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got in the way of my commercial business, my private commercial affairs.
Yeah.
I didn't breach a contract. You guys stopped me from fulfilling my contract because I had people waiting on those. You know? And that's the thing, you know, it was just be honest with them to the extent that you can. So anyway, I just want to reiterate, man, get those probable cause affidavits first and foremost and rebut them. Learn how to write an affidavit. There's all kinds of, I mean, you can look it up on Google or DuckDuckGo, you know, there's just, you know, how to write a good affidavit, and just read a little bit about affidavits and how to write them properly. And you'll find your own way. But the other thing I wanted to say is, I don't remember where I was going, but you know, when they tell you that first thing, you have the right to remain silent. Well, that's not what the Fifth Amendment says.
Mm-hmm.
The Fifth Amendment is it protects your right, and this is the way it has been decided by the courts, is that you have a right not to say anything that may incriminate you in any past, present, or future civil, criminal, or administrative proceeding.
Hmm.
That's the way the courts have decided it. When the mm-hmm. cops tell you you have the right to remain silent, what they're telling you is, sure, go into acquiescence. Keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. Don't argue with us. Don't challenge us. And we'll just accept that as your acquiescence.
Hmm.
You have the right to remain silent, sure. You also have the right to rebut everything that they're saying from the minute they say it on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cop tell me once, I don't want to hear all that. Just tell it. You tell it to the judge.
I've had that same thing. That exact same thing.
What's that?
I said, I've had that exact same thing. The first time I ever got pulled over, I had gotten rid of my license the week before. SGI had sent it in. I went in. I got my affidavit at the insurance place that I wasn't doing this no more, blah, blah, blah. I'm not kidding. 6 days later, I get pulled over by a cop. I'm trying to explain everything because I had Mika on the phone, a friend of mine, who was telling me, what do you need to say, blah, blah, blah. And I tried to explain everything. And I had this police officer tell me that he doesn't want to hear it, that he's going to give me a ticket, and that I need to go do it in court. And it was wild because he also told me that, like, you know, if I didn't tell him who I was, even though I wasn't doing anything to harm anybody, if I didn't tell him who I was, he was going to take me down to the police station and hold me indefinitely until he found out who I was. And then lied to the superior officer on the phone when I told the superior officer that's what he just told me, because I got him to reiterate it multiple times. Am I clear? Am I comprehending this correctly? That if I do not tell you who I am, even though I've hurt nobody, that if I do not tell you who I am, if you do not force me into contract here, you're going to take me and hold me indefinitely until you figure out who I am. Is that what you're telling me? Yes. But then on the phone, he's like, that's not what I said. You misunderstood me. No, I heard you clear. I got you to repeat it multiple times, sir. You're lying.
Right.
That was wild.
Well,
continue.
Besides the fact that he literally just admitted that he was willing to commit a crime of kidnapping,
mm-hmm.
getting back to the first thing that he says, you know, you tell it to the judge, I look at him like, No. I'm not going to tell the judge anything. You're the one that's going to be talking here. You're the one that put all this crap down on this paper and has all these presumptions that I'm driving or I'm subject to the statutes or I'm this or that or the other thing, or I'm a U.S. citizen or whatever presumptions you're making that you just basically admitted to on that piece of paper, you're going to have to explain to the judge. Do you have any firsthand knowledge of the fact that I'm a United States citizen under the 14th Amendment?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay. So then how does this even apply to me? Are you mm-hmm. do you have any evidence to prove the fact that I'm subject to the motor vehicle code? Do you have any evidence to support the fact that I was operating an automobile in commerce, thereby making it a vehicle and me a driver?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know any of these? Do you even know what any of this means? Because,
yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying. You put him on the stand and you can look, I'm not going to tell the judge anything. I'm just going to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to prove you to be incompetent to testify. And once it's proven that you're incompetent to testify, all of your testimony must be struck from the record, including this
mm-hmm.
citation.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing, because I didn't want to be on here too much longer, but one of the other things I wanted to get at was the whole concept of, they say anything you say can will be used against you in a court of law. Okay, great. But how do I get by with not saying anything and still
mm-hmm.
make this happen and make it work for me? I ask
yeah.
questions. If you look at the definition of the word as, the two-letter word as, one of the definitions of it is in the capacity of. So as means in the capacity of. And we all know what a king is. The king is the sovereign. So if
mm-hmm.
I'm not making statements, then I haven't created any standing. I haven't taken any position that I need to defend. I'm simply in the capacity of the sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I am as king questions, I don't have to answer anything. Let them hang themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to ask stupid questions, but I'm going to ask questions that are relevant to whatever the subject matter that they brought before the court was. And it's
mm-hmm.
going to all lead back to, it's all going to lead back to why the court doesn't have jurisdiction because there's no justiciable controversy.
Yeah.
You know, only debtors argue. Creditors don't argue. Debtors argue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Why, debtors are in dishonor. I'm not going to dishonor myself or this court by wasting anybody's time.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the justiciable controversy? This person doesn't even know me. So they can't claim that I breached a contract with them. They can't, and if they just pulled me over on the side of the road, then there's no injury or damage. So
mm-hmm.
who is this person? Most of us in the course of our lives, we lose this intuition that we have. It's basically like this. If somebody comes up to you on the street and you have no idea who they are and they just walk up to you and they say, "Hey, Sam, you owe me $50. Well, your natural instinct would be to ask three questions. And these are the same three questions that we need to kind of keep focused in our head when we get involved with, when we get into court and deal with these prosecutors is, number one, who are you? Number two, what do you want from me? And number three, why do you think I owe it to you? These are not legal things or anything. This is just common sense how people interact with each other when they're told that, when somebody creates a claim. who are you, what do you want from me, and why do you think I owe it to you? And if you can just stay focused on those three questions, and all of, you know, each one of those questions has a variety of other questions underneath of it that could be asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are you? Well, I'm the prosecutor. Well, I didn't ask for your title. I didn't
mm-hmm.
ask what you do for a living. I asked, who are you? You think
mm-hmm.
they want to give their names? They don't. Sometimes they do, but most of the time they don't. You know, I had a judge one time, he says, well, what's your name? And after, because I had, he kept asking me, and I said, I'm commonly referred to as Chris. It was like, well, who are you? And I was like, well, I told you, I'm commonly referred to as Chris. He's like, well, that doesn't mean anything. What do we call you? And I said, you may refer to me as Chris. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what, all am I doing is creating hearsay. I'm not testifying that I'm Chris. I'm simply saying I'm commonly referred to as Chris, or you can call me Chris.
Yep.
I never said I was Chris. And the
mm-hmm.
judge goes, well, I mean, what's your name? And I told him, I said, well, I told you three times already, I'm commonly referred to as Chris. And the judge goes, well, I'm commonly referred to as Judge Thompson, but my name is Jack. And I'm like, that's nice. Good for you. He said, so I'm going to ask you again, what's your name? And I said, you may refer to me as Chris. And, you know, that was funny because they actually, over the course of about 13 hearings, or no, it was, I guess it was five hearings over a period of days. It was over a period of 72 days, but at one point during those hearings, there was like five hearings over 72 days, but at one point I was in court, and mind you, I was in jail this whole time. I just didn't have, I didn't care. I did not care. I wasn't going to let them have it. So at one of those points, they maybe third or fourth hearing, maybe about 60 days in or something, they realized, one of the judges realized that I had never admitted to being the defendant, ever. And so they literally shut the whole courtroom down, and they went from a public hearing to a private hearing, and they said, we're going to have an identity hearing to determine who you are. Because they realized they'd never, in 60 days, they had never got me once admitting to being the defendant or admitting to being anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have an identity hearing. You know, and that was interesting, but I won't get into the details on that. But
yeah.
Anyway,
go
back to the very beginning. Go back to where it all started. The very first thing that happens is that probable cause affidavit. It's a claim. Get a copy of it. Get that probable cause affidavit and rebut it with an affidavit and put that into the court record immediately.
Mm-hmm.
With a petition to dismiss. I don't ask for orders because, I was doing one the other day and I had it all typed up. I'm like, it was a petition. I don't call it a motion because motion, you're moving the court. And in order to move the court, you have to give them they have to have jurisdiction. So I call it a petition. But then I had a petition for an order of dismissal. And I mean, this thing was 10 pages long, and then I realized all of a sudden before I sent it out, I was like, I got to start at the very beginning all over again and go back every time I wrote petition for an order for a dismissal. I got to take that order out and say petition for dismissal because I'm not even petitioning the court for an order. How can they order anything if they don't have jurisdiction? So, I mean, I'm picky with my words, but you don't have to be that picky, but just get in there, get those probable cause affidavits, rebut them, and I'm telling you, if you do it right, you won't have any issues. They'll have to shut it down because there's no justiciable controversy. It's agreed with everything you could agree with, and then the things you couldn't agree with, you basically were like, well, bring evidence of this, 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 and this, and then we'll discuss that. But if you can't bring evidence, we're not discussing anything because why would I discuss quote unquote facts not in evidence?
Yeah.
You know, you if you watch lawyer shows, a lot of times they'll do that. Objection. They're talking about facts not in evidence. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't either. If there's no evidence that there was a breach of contract, then why would I talk about it? How can I say I breached a contract that I've never seen evidence of existing?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's time for you to bring the contract. You're saying I breached the statute. Okay, prove that I'm subject to that statute.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't. Okay, so again, I'm not going to argue that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to argue whether I'm subject to it or not. You're presuming that I am, and you're asking everybody else to presume that I am subject to that statute, but you can't bring
mm-hmm.
any evidence to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not gonna discuss about whether I'm subject to it. Until you bring evidence to prove that I'm subject to the statute, I'm not. And if I'm not subject to the statute, there was no breach. And if there was no breach, there can't be any justiciable controversy. And if there's no justiciable controversy, this court has no jurisdiction. There's nothing to argue. Anyway, that's pretty much all I wanted to get at tonight. I'll probably mute myself and listen to you for a while, but I don't know. Can I just stay on this line and mute myself and listen, or?
Yep. We're going to go for
okay.
a quickie commercial break, though, because we missed our commercial break, because this is just so interesting. I love this. It's like I've heard you talk to us a few times about, well, to me a few times about this, but it's just like, it's just today, it's just really sinking in. It took a little bit more of experience and knowledge, and today it's just like, all of this makes sense now. Whoa.
Nice.
Alrighty.
Good.
Right?
All right, I'm going to mute and let you go to commercial.
I literally get it. Alrighty. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, guys, and we're going to come back. And thank you, Chris, for showing up today and flooding us with your incredible knowledge. More and more people need to know about this because with the way things are going, you know, knowledge is power. So, alrighty, so we'll be right back.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
To have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Hey, everyone. Proof here. Just wanted to ask you guys, are you guys tired of all the mask ordinances that are passing all over the place with people telling you that you're not allowed to buy and sell unless you have a piece of fabric over your face? Well, we sure are tired of it. Please check out realbarefaceislegal.org and help us get together to fight these mask ordinances. You can also find Bareface Is Legal on Facebook, either as a group or a business page. Anyway, help us fight back against these stupid mask mandates. RealBareFaceIsLegal.org.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve Coagula. Solve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled. Snakes in the grass. Son of position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast. I got ya. I got ya right where I want ya. Like a raw line in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a boy. Can you hear me now?
Hey, just all part of the game.
Ain't this thing for so long now, it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow the world with Satan.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.webs.com. That's official, ninjascroll.webs.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Please check out our sponsor, Save Around. Save Around coupon books have been with us for several years, and they help you save money when going out to eat, renting a car, buying flowers, and all kinds of other good stuff. The good thing is you can view the coupon books before you buy. Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.com, and click on the Save Around book that you'll see right next to our chat room. Like I said, you could preview it before you purchase, and hopefully you'll save yourself some money and help us as well. Please check it out.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Peter, the Korean films are my letter of recommendation. It is obvious their hearts are a letter of approval from Messiah. Dionysus from the 405 BC play the Baker and Jesus of Nazareth quote the same line, kicking against the pricks. That is plausible, is it not? Am I not an apostle?
Let's study this and more proof that a test of whom we love exists in the New Testament canon. Join Everlasting Covenant Study Free from Paul, which airs Saturdays noon Pacific, 1 Mountain, 2 Central, and 3 Eastern for 3 hours on Saturdays, where listeners enjoy fellowship and study of the words of Messiah versus yours. Paul 3195276208. Saturdays at noon Pacific.
All right, everybody, we are back on Open World, and we had a good friend of mine and a very educated individual, Chris Martin. He showed up, and he taught us quite a lot of good stuff. Like I said, I've heard these things a few times, but tonight it finally sunk in, finally, after almost years of hearing this. I'm very honored and privileged to have been able to sit with him for an hour, and I think you guys are very appreciative of the things that he told us tonight. If at any point you want to pop in again, Chris, feel free to push one and I'll let you back on air. We can chit-chat some more. Hope to maybe have you again in the future, because this man always has something that's just so mind-blowing to say in every capacity, at least so far that I've experienced. We've been friends for a little while, and I've never been led astray with this guy. We've always had really, really good conversations. They're always full of laughs. They're always full of knowledge. They're always like just something next level. Some conversations are just so incredible, and he always has something super interesting and knowledgeable to say. Alrighty, I just popped over to Twitter really quick. I kind of had a couple chuckles with some of the stuff that's going on Twitter. Like I was saying at the beginning, I haven't really been on the news a whole lot. There's just been a lot of things going on in life this week, so I haven't really paid attention a lot to the news. But a couple of things I did find really interesting. Chuck Costello, almost 24 hours ago, allegedly hired Hunter Biden's laptop. There's a lot of information that's on those that laptop that's been well, we'll just say it's been really interesting. There's been a lot of stuff that's been allegedly shared from this laptop here. Actually, I'm going to go find the tweet right now. I just retweeted it not that long ago. There was a different tweet that I was going to go look at here that I'm going to – let me go see this specific tweet. You might be able to find it. Why is my profile not working? Really, I can't even get to my profile anymore. Give me one sec here. Profile. Well, if you know, I click the profile button, that would probably make things a whole lot easier to find. Bombshell report. Laptop emails reveal Hunter Biden was receiving classified State Department briefings on a regular basis. Not to play in the Hegelian dialectic here, but I think that if that would have been Trump doing something like that on Trump's laptop, I think everybody would have lost their minds. So I just find it really interesting that you know, little fringe network news people are blowing this up, yet absolutely nobody is saying anything otherwise. That's always got to be something else. And then this other tweet that I just saw from Jack Prospect. So there was this issue with these five cops beat the crap out of a guy down in the States. He ended up dying. And I'm just going to go find this tweet again here really quick because I had to go back to my profile here in order to be able to do. Here we go. Jack Posobiec, whatever his name is. I can never pronounce his stuff. Let me just scroll for a second here because I saw him retweet. Give me a sec. Come on, load computer. Well, there's always the fun thing of going real live time that it's just like, you know, you got to scroll and you got to scroll and you got to scroll and it's like, oh, man, I don't want to scroll. If I can't find it in the next 3, 2, oh, there it is. Ha-ha, I win. Opinion, this is from CNN. Opinion, the police who killed Tyre Nichols were black, but they might still have been driven by racism. You can't make this stuff up, folks. We have five black police officers who beat the crap out of a black, killed a black man, and yet that's still being driven by racism. I'm not really sure at what point we're going to start admitting that it's not about skin color, but it's more about character, which, you know, we just spent the whole last hour talking about, you know, persons and harmed parties and commercial contracts and stuff. The fact that these people uphold this ridiculous system where they're claiming that you have an injured party, but there's no real injured party. It's all just breach of contract, which they push onto you when you were born, you know, which is, again, what Chris was saying is all hearsay. The whole thing is so messed up. And, again, I'm really glad that he came on tonight in order to be able to share his piece. Because, again, more people need to start understanding this. I'm actually hoping to get my friend Mika on here at some point. He has his website, sovereigntruth.com. Actually, I could probably grab this, guys, if you want. Let me see. Sovereigntruth.com. So sovereign-truth.com. You can also find his book, Sovereign Citizen, and all of his information. He does some blogging and stuff. And actually, Chris, you're still listening. If you have a blog or if you have a website or a locals or anything like that that you are, you know, putting this information out there and you want to share it, hit me up and I'll let people know where they can find you. That you can share more of this stuff. So I'm sure that, you know, I would love to have you on again sometime sooner than later because you've always got something really interesting to say. But if you have something that, you know, like a website or something, hit me up and then I'll let everybody know where they can find you in that capacity. So, you know, because people are getting more and more hungry about this kind of stuff. Let me grab this really quick and I'll throw it in the chat here in case everybody or anybody is listening. This one is from my friend Mika Sovereign Tooth. All right, so we always start off their shows with a little bit of Am I the Asshole on Reddit, and I love these things. They're kind of interesting to look at, interesting to read. There's always some stuff going on in people's lives that, you know, is practically irrelevant, but it always makes you think about people's situations, always puts you in other people's shoes kind of thing. Here we go. This is actually one that I was just about to start reading that I actually found really interesting. Talking about evidence, speaking about evidence, this one was actually really interesting. Okay, so this is on the Reddit thread, Am I the Asshole? Am I the asshole for refusing to apologize to a teacher and parent until they acknowledge that they were wrong? I drop my 9-year-old son off at school at 8 a.m. every morning so he has time to meet up with his friends and whatnot before the lineup at 8:30 a.m. Basically, parents drop their kids off at the front gate and a staff supervises to make sure that the kids get on campus quickly and keep the flow of traffic moving. If they are not coming to school via car, then they have to enter campus on the other side, which is not preferable because there is a lot of traffic and construction. The system works every day, but Friday, when they have this one teacher doing gate supervision, she spends way too much time chatting with people. I start keeping track of how much time this is adding up, and it's a lot. Today, she spent time showing a parent pictures on her phone and talking. I honked, and I was ignored. I can't let my son out of my car until a staff visually sees him transition from my car onto campus. Eventually, I got out of my... Oh, no. Hold on. Let me go back. Okay, I got to scroll down a little bit. Hold on. Eventually, I got in my car and asked the mom and teacher how much longer they were going to be. There's like 20 cars behind me and 3 ahead of me, and this only happens when this teacher is doing gate supervision. The mom drove off, and the teacher said nothing. Later today, I got an email from the VP telling me that I yelled at her and the mom and created an unsafe situation by getting out of my car. I corrected that version by saying that the teacher was creating an unsafe situation by creating traffic. The VP asked me if I yelled or cursed, and I said nope. She said that someone said they had recorded me doing so. I told her not to play games with me because she'll lose. Because guess what? I recorded it too. All of a sudden, it's a misunderstanding, and I was asked to apologize to the teacher. I said I would after she acknowledged she was wrong. Touche! Two can play at that game. Teach the asshole. These are the comments, not the asshole. Funny how they changed your tune because you actually recorded it. What would irk me is the most is that the VP was ready to lie and let the actual unsafe situation continue. Like, really? Lying about yelling, lying about cursing, and lying about recording, and then claiming you're creating an unsafe situation? Neither of these people should be in charge of children. And honestly, I kind of can't help but agree, because if you're not going to be able to take accountability yourself, and again, when you're providing a claim and then you're asked to rebut it with evidence because you've got the evidence, they've got absolutely nothing. So this is all falling in line, just absolutely beautiful. I love that we had this conversation today, and I love that this specific Am I the Asshole Reddit thread popped up. She wasn't wrong. She purposefully lied and tried to get you in hot water. Oh, yeah, okay, she wasn't wrong. She purposely lied and tried to get you in hot water. I see nothing here to apologize for at all. Just going purely off the post, I'd say not the asshole. However, someone who records themselves politely asking how long something will take and uses the phrase, don't play games with me because you'll lose, you sound like a piece of work. I won't consider that inference into judgment. I really don't like when people do that here, so I'm still saying not the asshole, but boy, howdy, you don't come across as a likable person. Well, I mean, when dude's made to wait and wait and wait, and then they accuse him of something, and then lie and say that they have proof, and then when he's ready to provide proof of claim, I would say that I'm on his side. I'm sorry. You might think he's not likable, but I think that was kind of BS that he was just put to that situation, and kind of nonsense. Oh, Ooh, I'm going to read this one because books are my life, and I would be choked, I think. Let's go through this one. This one looks really interesting. Am I the asshole for accidentally destroying someone's book? Last week, I borrowed one of my friend's books. We're not that close, but we both share a love of reading. Anyway, I was reading said book whilst in the bath last week, and it led to me accidentally dropping it in the tub. Yeah, you're the asshole. Why would you read a book in a tub? Why would you do that? Oh, my God. Anyway. The pages are ruined. The book has expanded quite a bit, but in my opinion, it's still readable. There we go. Property damage. Of course, though, I still felt very guilty, and I offered to replace it. She refused and said it shouldn't worry about it. Accident happened after all, but now I've found that she's going behind my back and telling all her mutual friends about it. She isn't saying it directly, but she's heavily implying that I didn't try to do anything about it. Literally going back to the conversation we had before. If there's a harm party, you try and deal with it outside of court. You try to approach him. Say, hey, you know, I may have wronged you, blah, blah, blah. Let's try and sort it out. You try to seek remedy for the situation. Continuing. I'm pretty sure I'm not the asshole, but some of my other friends say I should just be the bigger person and replace her book. However, I'm feeling quite hurt by her words and now very reluctant to purchase something for her. So what should I do about it? Should I ignore it, or should I just go ahead and buy her another book? Well, I mean, so here's the thing. You offered to buy her a book. You're ready to buy her a book. She said that don't worry about it, but then she goes behind your back, and then she starts running her mouth about it. Obviously, you know, when you tried to seek remedy and she said that was okay, that quote-unquote debt was nullified. There is no debt. And the fact that she's running her mouth, like, that's trash. That's trash. It's defamation. Anyway, we're talking about legalist speak. That's defamation. Like, hey, I did offer the chance to remedy the situation. You nullified the debt, so now there is no debt. The fact that you're still talking about it, obviously you have a problem. So we need to discuss that because I'm not going to tolerate that kind of nonsense. I've replied to a couple comments, but I think it's better if I just add everything here so everyone can have all the information. Firstly, I offered to replace a book like 5 or 6 times, but each time my friend told me not to worry and that it would just be a waste of money if I did decide to replace it. After all, I've already read it, she said to me multiple times. So, I mean, I don't know how many more times you had to bring that up to her, but, you know, after 5 or 6 times, I'd say that's pretty good. In fact, next time, get that in writing. Get it in writing, because obviously her wood is not good and she's a liar. And she's got issues. So next time, just straight up get that in writing. Because that way, if she runs her mouth, you have evidence that she told you it was fine. So if she's running her mouth to people, you can provide that evidence that it's just like, hey, she's defaming my character because she can't hold her word. Also regarding the bath controversy, I often read books in the bath to relax a little bit in the evening. My friend knows this and even does it herself. Well, I still wouldn't read books in the bath. Like, are you nuts? I also mentioned that those were probably my plans, i.e. I said something like, I can't wait to read this book in the bath later, and she didn't show any expression or discomfort or whatever. In fact, she slightly encouraged me by saying something like, I'm so jealous. I've got to work later, so I don't have time to relax. Jealous in, like, a friendly, joking way. Again, I wouldn't risk reading a book in the bath. That's somebody else's. Nuts. Edit 2, many people are wondering if the book was extra special in some way, excluding the fact that it's a book she bought for herself, and are also wondering what the book actually was, but no, it wasn't a special edition, nor was it sentimental. The book I got wet was Open Water by Caleb Nielsen, a beautiful urban fiction and romance book, which deals with several important issues I would recommend. Sounds interesting. I actually might look into that. This may also come across as defensive, but I truly don't believe the issue lies in me reading the book in the bathtub. My friend has also read books I've lent her in the bath many times, and though it may seem like I'm careless in other people's books, and this is the first time I've ever had even a slightly damaged one of her books, I truly did feel bad and insisted on replacing it multiple times, but each time she refused, so I just accepted it and moved on. All right, let's go down to the comments, see what some of these people have. Comment number 1, you owe her a new book. You took a risk with someone else's property and destroyed it. You're the asshole for thinking you don't have to take responsibility and replace what you destroyed. You should have bought a replacement and give it to her when she told you that you had an accident with the old one. Your biggest fault here was offering to replace it instead of just doing the right thing. No, I don't personally agree with that. Because if she was actually willing to hold her word, then it wouldn't have mattered whether or not she told them. She would have replaced it, and she was just asking, you know, what's the harm in asking? I mean, myself personally, I would just probably go ahead and replace it, but I would also convey to them that it's like, hey, I did wreck your book. I'm going to replace it, but you're going to have to give me some time because I'm going to have to get a new book. Just so that they're not wondering, oh, what happened to my book? You said you were going to give it back. Oh, well, you know, like, I don't see the problem with being honest here. So I think you're not the asshole, and that whoever just commented that is most certainly the asshole. What is the point of offering to replace the book? Gee, I was doing something foolish and ended up destroying your property. Would you like me to replace it, or can we just forget about and move on? Would you like the waterlogged copy back? Like, what? You should have automatically bought a new one. How is there even any confusion here? You're the asshole. Wrong again. I'm not even gonna argue with this. I mean, if somebody would have told me that they were gonna read the book, if I offered somebody a book, and, like, a lot of the books that I have, some of them are a lot harder to find because a lot of them are older now. You know, they're from the 80s. They're from the 60s. They're not very easy to find. If somebody told me they were going to read my book in the bath later, I would tell them, I don't freaking think so. That's not going to happen here. In fact, one time I had a book that I had lent to a friend, and he peeled the front pages back and was, like, bending the binding of the book, and I kind of freaked out. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? And he's just like, well, I'm reading the book. I'm like, dude, like, no, like, that's not how I read my books. I know that sounds kind of crazy. It's just like, but, like, try to keep my book in, like, you know, the best condition you can. Obviously, it's going to come back. It's not going to be in new condition. But, like, making it look like it just went to the freaking dryer because you read the book, it's like, that's not, I'm not a fan of that. Like, I expect it somewhat back in somewhat the same condition. But, you know, he's also the kind of individual that is just like, you know, I like my books to have character. I like them when they're like, you know, they've been read like 100 times and they're kind of beat up and old. I'm like, okay, well, that's you. That's you. It's just like, but I'm not going to treat your book that way. So if you're going to borrow my book, don't treat it that way. But that's just kind of, that's coming back to the whole contractual thing. And yeah, personally, I don't think this individual is the asshole. I think all these commenters are the asshole. But at the same time, either way, as long as she gets the book, or she says she doesn't want the book, then, you know, whatever. Maybe we'll do one more and then we'll get into some news stuff because I think that would be interesting. Ooh. This one looks interesting. We'll do one more here. Am I the asshole for not looking after my friend's kid? Throwing a throwaway because my friend's kid knows my main English is not my first language, so sorry if it's confusing. TLDR, I, a 33 male, work in childcare. When I go to visit my friend, 30 male, his wife dumps the baby on me and walks away to go relax. I tell her I'm not there to babysit. Am I the asshole? No. No, that you're not her baby. You're not getting paid to babysit. I mean, we could get into the whole discussion about how, you know, it takes a village to raise a baby or all that other stuff, but, like, you're not getting paid to look after this kid. You're going to visit your friend. If she needs a break, she can either talk to her husband to give her a break, or she could talk to her family to give her a break, or she could ask you if you could watch the baby, which you are allowed to politely decline that, no, I don't want to watch your kid, sorry. Or she could hire somebody. She could hire a babysitter or get childcare or any other thing. You don't just dump your baby off of somebody and then be like, I need a break, and then walk away. That's not how it works. Anyway, today I was visiting, and as my friend was putting together food for all of us, his wife came over, dumped the baby on me, and walked out of the room to go relax. I got up, walked over to her, and handed her baby back. I told her I was not visiting for childcare reasons, and I do enough of that at work, so I just want a break today as it's my day off. She said she wanted a break from the baby as it is hard work looking after the baby. I told her that's not my problem. Am I the asshole? My friend still said I could have at least held the baby until he was done in the kitchen, but I said that I would have been willing to do it if I was actually asked nicely to do it. I might be the asshole because I could have looked after the baby for a bit until my friend was free, but took the baby straight back to the mom. No, sorry, buddy. You're most definitely not the asshole, especially when you work in childcare. Especially when you've got to deal with kids. I know it's not the same as dealing with a kid 24/7, but when you're working in childcare and you're looking after multiple people's kids, as a parent, you're allowed to lose your marbles a little bit at home, and you're allowed to recoup, and you're allowed to forgive yourself and move on. As a childcare worker, you are not allowed to lose your marbles even in the slightest, especially now in this cancel culture days. If you even lose your marbles in the ever little bit of slightest, especially with all the cameras and stuff there are now, you have to be on your A game 24/7. Because if you even so much as slip up a tiny bit, your ass is brass through and through, 110%. So the fact that she's just going to handle, where is her husband in all of this? And why is she handing the baby off to him instead of her husband? Like, can we ask ourselves that question? Like, he just automatically shows up, and she's just like, oh, great, a babysitter. I'm going to bug her off now. It almost sounds like she's jealous, envious. It almost sounds like she's envious that her husband is having time over, and they're trying to spend some time together to hang out, and now she thinks that she's going to impede on their time and force her husband's friend to watch the baby, almost like it's a punishment towards her husband. Honestly, that's what I feel like right now, is that she's envious that he's even there, that it sounds like he doesn't even have kids. That she's like, oh, well, you don't have kids, therefore you can watch my kid. And it's like she's trying to get, I feel like the husband isn't doing a whole lot at home. Honestly, that's the feeling that I'm getting this, because how is it two different situations where she dumps the baby off on him, and he's just like, oh, well, no thanks. And now, you know, dude's friend is mad that he didn't just deal with it when nobody asked him in the first place, asking for consent. Like, how is it that hard to ask? Anyway, nah, you ain't the asshole, buddy. I think that's kind of nonsensical. And, yeah, the asshole. The fact that she didn't even ask you is baffling. She's acting so entitled. Like I said, I don't think that the relationship between her and the husband is as stable as it appears to be, because the fact that she's just kind of pushing this off as a means to punish her husband almost, and that she needs a break, but yet she can't get anybody else to do it. I mean, I want to also know, like, how many times is this guy coming over and, like, you know, that the husband is, I don't know, something's really fishy going on there. Anyway, back to comments. Not the asshole. You're right to set boundaries. I teach kids ranging from 3 to 18, and I'm dead tired of people assuming that they have a right to dump their kids' child care onto me during my free time. They usually say that if I chose this career, it means I love children, and so I should actually enjoy dealing with their kids. What a load of crap. If this mom needs a break, she has her husband to turn to or has to pay a sitter. Literally what I just said. I completely agree. I entirely, 110%, completely agree. Okay, let's pop over to Twitter and let's see what's going on Twitter, because I haven't been on Twitter in a few days. And I actually have a YouTube video that I had watched this afternoon that I actually, the LGBTQ movement, there's been a lot of things going on in this particular domain, and it has been absolutely rocking my mind at what's been going on with all of this stuff. So Carolyn Boyce, sent handle Dr. Carolyn B, so Carolyn with a Y. God, blocking trans activists is satisfying. It's almost as satisfying as blocking conservatives. This must be like a libertarian. I literally wrote the book about fighting back against the woke left. This almost seems like a parody account. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I don't know. I've been noticing that, like, there has been a lot of fighting. Actually, I'm going to head over to YouTube right now, and I'm going to pull up this video that I watched the other day. It was just, I'll post the link here for you guys if you want to check it out. Arielle Scarcelli, I think that's her name. I can never pronounce her name right. She's been doing a lot of videos lately, and when I watched this video, you guys, let me tell you that it absolutely blew my mind that this was even a possibility. I literally can't even believe this is happening. I literally posted a Facebook status today that I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, if I would have realized that, you know, 10 years ago, if I would have thought, like, you know, when I was going to university and the whole argument being brought up about sex versus gender, I mean, back then to me, it didn't really make sense. It makes sense now, but a lot of this is just definitions for everything. They're making up a lot of things, you know, living in a fantasy world. And if you want to live in a fantasy world, I'm not going to say that you can't. I'm also not going to say that you're not valid in your feelings or that, you know, you shouldn't try to live your best life or be you. If you're not hurting anybody, if you're not causing anybody harm, if you're not destroying anybody's property, if you're not, like, if you're just genuinely living your best life, go ahead and do whatever you want. I really don't care. You can be identifying as a turtle. You can be identifying as a woman. You can, you know, identify as a cloud. I really don't care. At the end of the day, if it makes you happy and you're not hurting anybody and you're trying to find the answers in life, because there's a lot of them. I mean, you know, spoiler alert, the answer is love, by the way. And there's different kinds of love and that kind of stuff, and I think we'll get into that on another conversation on another time. But the answer is love. And then once you start understanding that, a whole lot of things come, you know, come to fruition. You know, when you actually love somebody, you hold their word with them, you respect their relationship, et cetera, et cetera. There's just a whole lot of things that come out of that agape love, that true love, where it's like that unboundless, timeless love, where it's just like, it doesn't matter, like, let's just love one another, you know? It's some neat stuff. Anyway, going back to this video, Arielle Scarcelli, I just posted the link, and I will pop over right now. If you're on freedomizerradio.com, hold on here, beep, beep, beep. There we go. We have a chat section on the Freedomizer website. If you go to www.freedomizerradio.com, you can click Listen Live, and there's a little chat box there that I'm going to submit this to, or at least try to. Oh, apparently that's not going to work. Hold on, we'll just go this way. There we go. I just posted the link there. You guys can go up over to there and watch it. I just posted in the chat for Freedomizer today, and then I'm also going to post it in the description for the show, next commercial here. So we're starting off this video, and forgive me for a second. I'm just so taken aback at the absolute, fuck, mockery that this is. Okay, so the title of this video is You're a Man in a Wig. It's trans-based. Woman, trans woman goes off. And Arielle Scarcelli, she's a lesbian. She used to be liberal. She's conservative now. I don't care for labels. I don't care for the Hegelian dialectic politics nonsense. To me, it's all just a facade of choice that Eddie Bernays was, you know, brainwashing you into doing. Him and Joseph Goebbels were homies, and they credited each other's work. If you ever check out Eddie Bernays, his book, Propaganda, head over to libgen.is, download his book, Propaganda, or you can find it at your local library. But for this website, libgen.is, or you can check out Z Library and get it there as well. Strongly recommend. There's also the four-part series, BBC documentary series, The Century of Self. The first one is the most important. The consecutive three following are, you know, kind of here or there. But that first one, talking about Eddie Bernays, who he is, what he did, how he was able to manipulate people into thinking that they had a choice when they really didn't even actually have a choice. It was some wild stuff. This man is a mastermind. Oh, and guess what? He's Sigmund Freud's nephew. So he knows a lot about psychology. He knows a lot about, you know, the reptilian brain and how you can keep people in a fight or flight mode, the basics of humanity, you know, where you have to eat, you have to sleep, you have to feel like you're safe, you have, you know, you have sex, blah, blah, blah. You know, that reptilian brain, then you move up to the mammalian brain where you have your emotions, and then you move up to the neocortex where we're actually able to think and have conversations over what is a legal person, what's reality, what's not reality, you know, having things like contracts, blah, blah, blah. That's all like humanity and the neocortex. Anyway, going back to this, so the video starts off, Arielle starts talking about, you know, like how it's just, it's come full circle. It's come full circle, essentially, that the LGBTQ community has essentially lost bloody mind. Because she plays this part of this video where this woman is talking, well, this trans woman, is talking about and slamming drag queens. Talking about and slamming drag queens. And essentially saying that it's trans face, that drag queens are people who put on costumes, they do this whole getup, this whole show, and it's to make fun of trans people, people who are just trying to live their genuine best life, who want to be a woman, who are trying to transition to a woman because they have gender dysphoria, essentially, DSM diagnosed gender dysphoria. and being a drag queen is making fun of trans people. And when I tell you that my mind was literally blown at hearing these words, I literally cannot believe, and again, like, not to crap on the LGBTQ community, I'm not a trans hater, okay? Bro tip, you know, disclosure, there we go, disclosure. If you show up to my house, and you're a trans woman, you're going to be treated like a woman. In my house, you're going to be called she, her. You're going to be, you know, we'll do our nails together. We'll do our hair together. You know, these kinds of things. As long as you can recognize and understand that I am a biological female, that I was literally born this way, and then I will recognize, you know, if you can recognize that I don't have the same struggles, we will have a lot of similar struggles when it comes to certain things. However, we will also not have a lot of similar struggles when it comes to certain things. You will never know what it's like to go through puberty as a female. You will never know what it's like to be treated as a female, as a subordinate to men. You will never know what it's like to, you know, be talked down on and look like, you know, you'll never know those certain aspects in a lot of things in life. Now, a lot of things, you know, if you present as a female and you actually look like a female, you know, you talk like a female, you walk like a female, there's a lot of things that, yeah, you will most certainly be gendered and you will most certainly be treated like crap because of it. I mean, I can't say that I'll ever have my butt beat because, you know, I tried to hook up with some dude or something and he found out I was trans, he got mad and then he beat my ass, you know, saying that, you know, well, you tricked me or something like that. You know, I'll never experience that. But then again, you're never going to experience something like childbirth. It's just simply not going to happen. There is some advancements. Actually, I'm going to get into that next here, talking about these kinds of things. Chris Martin just commented. He said, we're going to go back to the trans thing in a second. But hey, if your listeners want to get in touch with me, my email is johnnyporoshenko@gmail.com. Okay, I'm going to comment this, in the blog talk chat, and then I will also put this in my show description if you will allow me. If you guys want to get a hold of Chris Martin in order to be able to get more information, hit up that email. I'll put that in the show description here during the next commercial. And like I said, dude is incredibly intelligent. And you know what? Honestly, if you really like his information and you really like what he does, and, you know, if you ask for his help, just give him some money, because I know he will definitely appreciate it. Like, you know, in these trying times, or send him some gold or something like that. You know, like, help a brother out. If you really appreciate the things that he's teaching you and you really like the things that he's sharing, just help a brother out and send a few dollars his way, or send him, like, you know, a gold coin or something his way. Just, you know, help him out so that he can keep doing what he's doing, keep sharing what he's sharing. And anyway, so yeah, back to this video. So anyway, disclosure full stop. You know, if you respect me, I'll respect you. We'll go so far as to say that. However, you're going to be swapping back and forth, and one day you're feeling like this, and one day you're feeling like that. I would strongly suggest that maybe you do get some help, because for you to be back and forth like that all the time, obviously you're not remaining in balance, and therefore something needs to give. You have to do some serious shadow work, because I'm going to bet that there's some childhood trauma and stuff there that's going on, that once that's addressed, this will no longer be an issue. That being said, for a trans woman to call drag women trans face, and to say that they're disrespecting trans women, when the whole point of drag in the first place was for men to dress up as hypersexualized, flamboyant, costume-esque, burlesque-esque women. Like, can we just address the fact that they're literally trying to erase females entirely out of this equation? Like, this is the part that's got me so taken aback and frustrated in so many ways, that it's just like, you know, I was all on board with, you know, like, recognizing and, you know, allowing you to be who you want to be, because I know I sure want that same, those same respects on my end as well. I was all on board with, you know, allowing you to, you know, do what you want to do, so long as I was given those same respects. Granted, you know, you don't want to just go do, you just because you have the right to do whatever you want doesn't mean you should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. When you actually start understanding things like contracts, you start understanding things like natural, and we're actually going to be going over natural in the future here, I think sooner than later. And like I said last week, I'm actually going to start going over things like self-defense. Because the things that I'm starting to see in self-defense, oh, by the way, I did find that video. So on the next commercial, I had spoken last week that there was a video from a TikToker with an article talking about how your legal MPs, like your MPs that you vote here in Canada, don't legally have to listen to you. I did find it. So when I'm at the next commercial, I will find it and I will post it here for you guys to check out. Because if you're in Canada, newsflash, your MPs don't legally have to listen to you. They have to listen to the Parliament. That's the contract they signed when they sign up for an MP, that they legally have to answer the Parliament. There is no legal requirements in order for them to listen to you. So just a fun fact, Trudeau is just going off and, you know, talking about all this crazy stuff, or, you know, they're sending over tanks that everybody's mad now, thinking that we're in World War III, which we're not, by the way. Personally, myself, I would consider a tank just like a gun. We've only been sending money and guns over to them. Meanwhile, they're taking everybody's guns away here. I mean, make that make sense. You know, oh, well, you're not allowed to have a protest here because, you know, Canada. Because Canada, you know, the fringe minority, they're obviously causing so many problems that they had to get the cops to break their legislation and do things that they did and take and destroy people's property. That was just absolutely insane. Meanwhile, they're taking away your guns. They're taxing you even harder. And because the whole end goal of this is to have a global carbon tax. And if you haven't heard of the Food Chain Reaction Game, I strongly recommend that you check it out. Food Chain Reaction Game by Cargill. That was done in 2015. And essentially the end game for the Food Chain Reaction Game is that they're going to have a global carbon tax. And they actually use the Food Chain Reaction Game in order to supplement and have the Agenda 2030 meeting, in which was also in 2015. It's no coincidence these things are happening, and it's no coincidence that 7 years later we start having some major economic blunders. That's that whole seven-year debt, Reformation or whatever. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me right now. But in Jewish law, every 7 years, they delete the debt. I can't remember. There's a specific name for it, and it's just not coming to my head at the moment. But anyway, it's no coincidence. 7 years, all this stuff starts happening. And, you know, Canada sending over a few tanks to Ukraine and then training the Ukrainian soldiers to do it. Meanwhile, they're taking away all your money and punishing you if you have a wood stove. It's pretty next level. It's pretty next level. Anyway, coming back all of this, Food Chain Reaction Game, Agenda 2030, you can definitely check those out because things are heating up and things are getting to that point. We're not actually going into war. Again, I really do consider tanks to be guns on wheels, and you can say, well, they're offensive all they want, or they're artillery or blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, guess what? So are planes with lasers on them, and they were using that to blast people in California and melt houses and cars. And you can actually go to Lockheed Martin's website that a few years ago, when I used to back do Against the Grain on Freedomizer, I actually read on the screen. I was actually going through Lockheed Martin's website and looking at some of the technology that they had. And even back then, they had dumped a few million into funding into trying to put direct energy weapons on planes. They're just lasers. And then I remember seeing on the actual screen, they actually put a laser on a ship and they shot down a drone. You didn't even see anything. All of a sudden you see this drone, its wing bursts into flames and then it hits the ground. In my personal opinion, I really don't see there being any difference between sending over a gun on wheels or just some guns. Either way, I don't think they should be sending anything at all. Because nobody really wants war, but really, I don't think they're actually going to go into war. I think this is all just a big facade that's been happening to have people's heads turned away, because now that people are dropping like stones over getting their pokes over the last 2 years, just like, you know, what's his name? Why can't I remember his name now? He's a funny-looking dude. But he used to work for... not funny looking in a bad way. I just remember he was kind of like he was definitely a scientist looking dude. Like he was like a chess major or something. Not like jockey looking. Geert Vandenbosch. There we go. That's his name. Geert Vandenbosch was saying even a few years ago, and other scientists were saying that if these people get these pokes, that they're all going to start dropping dead like stones in 2 to 5 years. So that's exactly what's happening right now. I just saw a report from Scotland that they have been having people just dropping like stones en masse, and the health authorities are allegedly free. The health authorities already know what's going on, but they're just putting out these statistics saying, holy smokes, with all these people are dropping like stones and we don't know why. Actually, fun fact for you, when all of this stuff was just starting to happen in the U.S., when they were shutting down the hospitals, when they were doing Film Your Hospital, et cetera, I remember reading a specific article. I don't remember where it was from, but I remember reading a specific article down in the States specifically that they were stopping sending out ambulances, specifically for people who are having heart attacks. I'll get back to the trans stuff here in a minute, but I'm going off because, you know, I'm on a tangent here. But I remember specifically that they were going off about not sending ambulances for people who had heart attacks. They would not send an ambulance if you became unconscious. If you were still conscious and you were having a heart attack, they would send an ambulance because it was going to be so tight, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, that's really interesting that they wouldn't send an ambulance for somebody who has had a heart attack and become unconscious. I mean, granted, the rights of survival, having a heart attack and becoming unconscious, are not great to begin with. In fact, CPR, if you start CPR on somebody right away who has had a heart attack and become unconscious, unfortunately, you're only going to have 10% chance and lower of reviving them. But with an AED machine, this is why I've been telling everybody over the last 2 years, like, mark my words, they're between $1,500 and $3,000. Get yourself an AED machine. Because if you, according to statistics, get an AED machine on somebody who has a defibrillation or whatever, I can't remember, it starts with an A, their heart just starts going funny. I can't remember. If you get an AED machine on them, within 3 minutes, their chance of survival is like 85%. If you get it on them after 3 minutes, it's like 50%. Either way, it's a lot higher than 10%. So people are starting to drop like stones. And like, mark my words, I remember saying this 2 years ago now when they were starting to talk about bringing in these freaking pokes. Because I remember being on the phone with my friend. She has Journey into Freedom on Freedom Revolution Network. You can check out her shows. I don't remember when they are. But I remember we were talking about this on the phone, and I remember telling her, I was like, how much you want to bet that these freaking pokes, and this is when the poke was just announced. I didn't even know anything that they had been doing mRNA experiments since like 2013. I didn't even know that they were stocking up and stuff in 2019. I didn't know any of this because, like, you know, I was into the old school wokeism. You know, 9/11 was an inside job, blah, blah, blah. I was learning about these things before, and had I just looked a little bit deeper, this probably would have popped up. Granted, it wasn't really a lot of, you know, public knowledge at the time, but it is most certainly now. So I knew a lot back then. I knew enough that that was a very dangerous thing that they was about to do, and I am most certainly not ever going to get poked over my dead body. You will not. You will not. I would rather go live in the bush with the shirt on my back than to get poked with this freaking thing. There's no way. It's just, this is straight Nazi Germany Nuremberg crap. It's absolutely insane. Anyway, because I remember telling her 2 years ago specifically, how much you want to bet, and I remember the words because I was sitting on my chair in my kitchen, how much you want to bet that they're going to bring in this poke and that it's going to start depopulating people, because this is the depopulation agenda that's going on right now. And there's a lot of theories around that, you know, with the pole shift that's coming, with experiments that are happening, that if the pole shift is coming, they simply cannot maintain this amount of people doing the farming that they're doing, and that the farming that we're doing in the name of excess is starting to really destroy the planet. I'm going to be starting to go over some permaculture stuff here in February because I feel it's strongly. We really need to start. Like, it sounds so cliche, and it sounds like so hippy-dippy. We really need to start going back to honoring and respecting, you know, the natural movements and the natural environment and stuff, and not, how do I say this, not putting ourselves onto it and then doing things like mono and, you know, thinking that we know best. We need to respect nature and how she rolls and work with nature rather than trying to work against nature and trying to fix, because unfortunately when you try to fix and you do it the wrong way, you're going to cause a lot more problems down the line. But back to the story, I remember telling her, how much you want to bet that they're going to give everybody these pokes and everybody's going to start dropping like stones from heart attacks and cancer, because heart disease is one of the number one killer. I think it is the number one killer in North America. And cancer, if it's not another number one killer, it's close behind that. Like, those two are constantly neck and neck. So to be giving everybody these pokes, to be entirely honest, if they can come up with, and I remember, like, this was 2 years ago, man, when I was saying this, I didn't even know about the mice experiments, that the mRNA was blowing out their livers and stuff. I had no idea even about that. This was just like my pure speculation, that people are so used to people dying from things like heart attacks and cancer that this is really going to be, and those are two really big money makers too, especially cancer. It's absolutely wild, and we're going to get into something else on cancer, but we're going to get back to this trans stuff. I'm just going all over the place today, you guys. My mind is just going a mile a minute. But, you know, these are two really big money makers, and people can accept at this point because of those two specific diseases, which are, a lot of it is brought on by diet and lifestyle. Our soil being depleted of nutrients, putting things like vegetable oils. And again, you can read, Pandora's Lunchbox, find that, and then Deep Nutrition. That's another one. Those two books really go in depth when it comes to nutrition and how putting things like vegetable oils and like having food science, lab science food and stuff. When you actually start really digging deep into food science, actually, I think that would be really interesting. That's one of the things I'm also going to go over here in the near future, is going over that book and starting to go over food science and how like neat it is. Like, don't get me wrong, I think it's really actually innovative and interesting. However, it is so detrimental to the human body that it's not even funny. that because we have done things in our lives and in our society to essentially bring these problems forward, you know, we made our bed and now we're laying in it. However, we're denying from the top because the authorities know best that these are the things that we're having to live with, that we've already just accepted them as normal, which is really unfortunate because these things are not normal and they could be easily fixed if we did proper nutrition. In fact, fun fact, I just had another friend reach out to me today in Canada and they asked me, where do you get apricot seeds? So you can look up Edward G. Griffin and look on his work on amygdalin, vitamin B17, or Laetril. There's a documentary out there called The Forbidden Cures. And there's a segment in there from Edward G. Griffin. You can find him. He's an intelligent man. In fact, I'm going to get a hold of him right away here and see if I can get him on the radio show because I think that would be really interesting, or at least have him do a private interview and then I can upload and you guys can listen to on this show. And then if you have any questions, maybe we can forward them to him, or we'll have to see how he sees it. He's quite older now, so I don't think he would really do a Friday evening with us, but, you know, I can always pull some strings and see if I can make something. In particular, due to the Cancer Act here in Canada, you cannot say that, you know, oh, XYZ thing cured cancer. So for the longest time, you had to say that things went into remission. However, they're starting to change these things now when they're coming out with these vaccines, that they're basically saying that things are curing cancer now because, again, they have their own language, they have their own jurisdiction, and they make their own rules. So when you consent to their jurisdiction, you consent to their language, you consent to their authority, quote-unquote, knowing full well that if you consent that they have, you know, jurisdiction over you, they're bending the rules for themselves now. So apricot seeds have, the theory goes that they have cyanide, they have like B17 and these things in there, and essentially, the cancer cells, which feed on sugar, feed on the sugar molecules in the amygdalin, which causes the release of cyanide, which then blows a hole, essentially, in the protective covering of the cancer cells, because cancer cells mutate to hide themselves from the body, so your body doesn't recognize there's actually anything going on. And meanwhile, these cancer cells are just going absolutely haywire. And that's just to say that this is one particular kind of cancer. We're not talking about, like, cancers from, like, you know, parasites or like radiation or poisons or things like that. You know, there are many causes of cancer, up to and including, you know, having harbored emotions from like childhood trauma or like, you know, later on trauma and things like that. When you constantly keep experiencing trauma, your body can actually experience copious amounts of like overdue, like long-term consistent inflammation, because essentially cause your cells to suddenly just go haywire and then things just start taking off and things go crazy. There have been people who have done things like, you know, tapping or Reiki or things like that that have gotten rid of their cancer. Things like if you find the book, I'm trying to think, The Cure for Cancer. Let me see if I can think. It's called Zapping. I can't remember the book name for the life of me right now, but the doctor who does it does zapping. It's essentially a little device that you hook up to yourself that you emit frequencies into your body, and then you register those frequencies with the parasites. And when you, and science knows this, actually the army and stuff know this, that when you put the frequency to the body at the same frequency, it actually destroys the being. So you can exist with all these other frequencies, but if you have the same frequency, it'll actually kill you. And that's essentially the theory that happens with these parasites. So anyway, going back to the B17, because your body doesn't recognize that it's actually a problem, it'll just go haywire. So when the cancer cell eats the sugar, eats the sugar, it blows, the cyanide blows a hole in it, suddenly your body starts realizing that, you know, it's like it's all of a sudden your body realizes there's a problem here, and it'll start helping to attack, and it's like, whoa, this isn't supposed to be happening. You know, it starts attacking and it eliminates it. So for anybody that's listening, if you're saying, hey, apricot seeds, that sounds like a really good idea, just a general rule of thumb, do not eat any more apricot seeds than you would apricots in a day. So if you've got like an active cancer, I would suggest things like 30 to 40. Don't come for me. If you decide to do it and you make yourself sick, that's on you. This is just from my personal experience. Your body is different. Listen to your body. And of course, you know, just disclaimer, listen to your healthcare professional, even though they be tripping half the time anyway. I'm just saying that so I don't get sued and I don't get this network sued. So if you decide to do this, that's on you. I'm not a health professional. I'm just somebody who has literally watched it work and who has friends who has literally had it happen work. You know, things like that. Like, I've literally seen it with my own two eyes. Actually, story time. We actually tried this out on my dog way back when I was younger because my dog had a terminal prostate cancer. My mom and my sister actually took our dog to the vet, and they didn't even do a physical on the dog because they said that he is in such bad shape that he is going to be dead within the week. They brought him home. They put him on rose hip tea, and then they started pounding the crap out of that dog with apricot seeds. He was actually starting to get better. They took him back to the vet a couple weeks later, and they said, like, yeah, we had just brought the dog, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what do you mean? There's no record. I'm like, they literally didn't even, like, put anything. They didn't even, like, look at him. They didn't even touch him because they literally said that he's going to die. Go home and make him comfortable. And they're like, holy crap, how is he still alive? And in fact, the dog was actually getting better. The bleeding had stopped. His diet had returned. He was actually starting to get healthier and better. He was starting to gain weight again. But unfortunately, my dad ended up getting diagnosed with cancer at the same time, so they didn't have enough money to get the apricot seeds for the dog and my dad at the same time, and ultimately we had to let the dog go. So he succumbed to his cancer, but we kept him alive all summer. He was supposed to be dead in a week, but he lasted months, and he was actually getting better. So, you know, if you listen to this and you're like, ooh, apricot seeds, here's the problem here in Canada is once upon a time you could buy apricot seeds here in Canada up until the about 6 months or so into the COVID crap. Unfortunately, we had a brand here that was from the States, Our Father's Farm, and they sold bitter apricot kernels and extra bitter apricot kernels. And Health Canada got smart, and they decided to stop the sale of apricot seeds because the amount of cyanide that they were finding in the apricot seeds was higher than they would like for the sale of goods. It was at a dangerous level. But you need the cyanide in the apricot seeds for it to actually work. Fun fact for you, B12 actually contains cyanide as well. I think it's called like cyobalamin or whatever. Anyway, if you buy yourself a multivitamin, vitamin B12, there's cyanide in vitamin B12. The synthetic stuff, it's there. And you need to have vitamin B12 or you will go nuts and die. Your system will not work. It is required that you have vitamin B12. Otherwise, you're up Crap Creek without a paddle. So at the beginning of all this COVID crap, they nailed Our Father's Farm, and they stopped the sale of apricot seeds here in Canada, unless, of course, you can test your seeds and it's below the level. The problem is the lower the cyanide, the lower the amygdalin, the less it works. And it's really hard because, like, if you have one batch that has a higher than another batch, you'd have to literally go through and, like, test every single freaking seed. It's just not going to work. So everybody stopped selling it. It's no coincidence. In my opinion, it's no coincidence that they stopped the sale of apricot seed, which is one of the easiest ways to kill cancer and one of the healthiest ways to kill cancer. There's many other ways, you know, that there's things like chaga and there's zapping and there's all this other stuff. Like I said, it could even be chalked up to emotional, blah, blah, blah. But this was one of the ones that actually worked. It was starting to get more popular. People had actually gone to jail over claiming that this cured cancer, et cetera, et cetera. It's no coincidence that they stopped the sale of it here in Canada, that you cannot buy it from a retailer here in Canada. You have to buy it and have it shipped in. There's no rules on consuming it. And FYI, this isn't something like almonds. Don't go pick up a bag of apricot seeds thinking that you can just sit and eat the whole freaking bag and it's not going to give you cyanide poisoning. At that point, it will give you cyanide poisoning. Don't be stupid. This is a health product. Treat it with care and treat it for your condition. You know, take your health into your own hands and don't expect other people, you know, oh, I heard this on the internet. Oh, this worked for so-and-so. Okay, well, I'm telling you it worked for me. There's a fairly good chance it might work for you, but I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that it will for sure work because I don't know you. I don't know your system. I don't know how you got cancer in the first place. It might even be hereditary, that it was just a time bomb ticking the way it happened because it was based on generational trauma. I don't know. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm going to try it, absolutely go ahead and try it. Again, just be aware that if you're starting to experience adverse symptoms, then you might want to check in with a professional and get their second opinion. Okay, like this is just, again, coming from the opinion of somebody who's literally seen it work, somebody who literally takes apricot seeds and literally tries it and like knows that, you know, for myself, this works. But again, it's no coincidence that they took off one of the easiest ways for most people to kill cancer off the shelves, claiming that this was, you know, against Canada Health regulations. Meanwhile, they brought in these freaking pokes, which are against the Nuremberg Code. In fact, if you actually go to Pfizer and their document, they don't even stop the study until this summer, 2023. They don't even stop the study until this summer. Just type in like Pfizer mRNA. I think that's what you type in, Pfizer mRNA, or whatever that was, and, you know, insert or, you know, things like that. It's freely unavailable. I'm just not going to Google it right now because I've Googled it 100. I don't remember what you have to Google, but I know it's absolutely there because I've Googled it so many times. And I think it's either June or July, I think. But I know it's this summer, 2023, when the actual studies stop. So whether you like it or not, whether the news is admitting it or not, because the news is not going to admit it, because the minute you actually admit something, you're at fault. I'm sorry, this is just so frustrating to talk about. It's so blatantly in your face that this is a giant experiment, and they can lie to your face all day long. They can gaslight you all day long. They can lie and say that's not the case all day long. That is most certainly the case. They're not giving you informed consent, and you are the experiment. Whether you like it or not, if you even got one, you are the experiment. So anyway, all that aside, coming all the way back, talking about cancer, talking about apricot seeds, coming all the way back to the gender stuff, we're just going to skip straight to the gender stuff and finish talking about this before we take another break, and then we talk about something else. And if you're listening right now, you can call in 319-527-6208. Listen live on blogtalkradio.com. So coming back to this video, like, it just blows my mind. And I'm sorry, but it just blows my mind that being a biological female, to be told by certain individuals who have been screaming at you for the last how long that if you don't respect them, you're a TERF. If you don't respect their identity, you're a TERF. You're a transphobic. You're this and that. I mean, can we even talk about the fact that transphobic became a thing anyway? A phobia is a fear. A phobia is a fear. If you're going to be using, you know, the proper terminology when it comes to these things, can we just stop using transphobia? Like, I'm not scared of trans people. I know there's a lot of people out there that aren't scared. In fact, I think at this point it would be really, really weird if you saw somebody down the street that was trans and you buckled to your knees. You were so scared that you just had to run away. It's like these people aren't spiders. They're human beings. They're human beings. And there's literally nothing to be scared of with them. Absolutely nothing at all. And most people, I'm going to say like the overwhelming 99.9% of people aren't scared of them. I'm not going to say that there isn't anybody that's scared of them at all because, you know, everybody has weird fears, but it's not a phobia. It's just, you know, an agreement to disagree on beliefs and one's view of reality and, you know, one's view of acceptance and things like that. We could call it discrimination if you'd like. However, you know, again, it's been absolutely wild. It's been absolutely wild. You know, it's like I was watching, I think it was it Ariel's or was it Blair's? I don't remember. I remember there was a drag queen. I'm pretty sure that came on to Ariel's. They were actually talking about the history of, like, drag and, like, you know, I don't know how much this correlates, but, you know, they were talking about way back in the day in the theaters that women weren't even actually allowed to perform in theater. And that I knew, having taken theater and acting and things like that. I didn't really see the acting. I took more of the backstage stuff, but being involved in drama and theater, that's a well-known fact in the lefty drama theater communities, that when, you know, women weren't allowed to act because it was improper and blah, blah, blah. So they had men playing women's roles, which was socially acceptable at the time. Weird if you ask me, but, you know, that's the way it was. So that is the way it is. Unfortunate, but true. And so it's almost like a stemming of that. I mean, you can get more into the history about, you know, like men getting together in nightclubs and, you know, they wanted to, you know, kind of feminize themselves and have fun and this and that and all that other stuff. I mean, there's a lot of history to it. And then you can get into, like, you know, the riots and things that were happening and stuff. And I think that would actually be interesting to go over one of these days. Just kind of looking into that just for a knowledge sake, just for a historical knowledge perspective, you know, just kind of, if you don't really know where things are coming from, how are you going to be able to comprehend it? You know, that kind of thing. So going forward, it was to essentially objectify and, to a point, be flamboyant and personify. That's the word I'm looking for. Not so much objectify, to a point, but personify women. And for trans women now to take the stage and not only tell, you know, and this is what blew my mind, is when I was looking up this individual, I can't remember their name, just looking at the comments that, you know, biological women who don't accept trans women as women are TERFs and they need to be ostracized and shut down and canceled and et cetera, but for them, for these same people to say that drag is making fun of and doing trans face, meanwhile, we're completely obliterating biological women from this entire conversation. And I say that's actually something really interesting that I also want to talk about today. And I find that really, really interesting. In particular, TikTok right now. When I went on the TikTok today, you know, because TikTok has, like, extremely hyper-targeted algorithms, I saw video after video after video of today of, like, you know, quite viral TikToks, not like small, like, you know, 500 likes or even a couple thousand likes. I'm talking, like, you know, minimum 50,000 likes up to 300,000 likes of biological women that are starting to stand up and say, you know what, if you want to be trans, you're more than welcome to be trans. You know, we'll accept you as a woman, but you're also a biological male. And whether you like it or not, that's going to simply be truth. Otherwise, you would not be trans. It makes no sense. And, you know, even when you look at J.K. Rowling and why she got canceled by saying, you know, biological women are biological women. And when you start erasing the science of biology, then there's no credibility to even being trans. You would just simply be a woman. You know, it's like you're a trans woman for a reason. You need to be respected in that capacity because you are trying to live the life of a different sex that you are genuinely. You genuinely want to be that different sex, but that still means you're trans. And if you weren't trans, you would just be a woman. You would have been, quote unquote, born in the right body, you know? And it just blows my mind that she got canceled for this because people took this so out of context. But meanwhile, there's, like, literally trans people on Twitter who are talking about this, and they're saying, you know what, no, J.K. Rowling is right. Like, where are you getting this transphobia from when she's saying is literally right? And she's donating a lot of her money to biological women and trans women, and she has trans friends. It's just like, can we just get out of la-la land here and just recognize that there are certain components to reality? And we can have a discussion another time about, you know, how the all is the mind and, you know, everything is energy and, you know, frequencies and light and blah, blah, blah. And we could shift those and shape those to whatever we want. And that is a possibility. Like, the monks and stuff do this, you know, things like levitation, you know, there's things that are possible that is, you know, science fiction outside of, like, you know, the weapons of war that they have. There are things that are possible and they have been documented and they can happen. But it takes you being in the right mind frame and to understand these teachings on a very deep and fundamental level. You literally are those teachings. You know, the all is the one. you know, when you start comprehending this and you start really getting your mind in that place that these things are possible. But to the average Joe, they sound absolutely insane. Blame them? I don't think so. But at the same time, they've been programmed to things, you know, things like this. And it's just like, so coming back to this, speaking about reality, actually, I'm going to go pull up this little graph right now. Give me one second here. I posted it on my Facebook. Give me a sec. I'm going to go look. This was actually shared by the liberal hive mind. And when I tell you my jaw hit the floor, I was so upset seeing this. The liberal hive mind, I guess the studies are starting to come out now, specifically talking about trans women specifically, reported symptoms of vaginoplasty patients. I butchered that. I am so sorry. Reported symptoms of vaginoplasty patients. Now, they did a study, and apparently this was a sample size of 80 patients. So this is 80 trans women that went through the surgery, okay? And these were the reported symptoms of vaginoplasty patients. So some patients reported more than one complaint. But at the very least, these trans women reported complaints post-surgery about up to a year later. And this is the biggest one. This is what freaks me out the most, is that these trans women are being lied to. They're being told by this culture that if you just get the surgery, everything is going to be so much better. If you just get the surgery, your life is going to be amazing. If you just get the surgery, you're going to be accepted and blah, blah, blah. No, the reality is at this current time, unfortunately, and science hasn't gotten to this point yet, and our minds have not gotten to this point yet. Either way, we're stuck on both ends. That this is a biological fact in reality right now, that when you're born, you are created with an outie, turning things on an innie. When you're innie, when your biology is literally programmed for it to be an outie, you're going to have problems. So starting with number one, 43 people, which is 53.8% of trans women, reported having pain that required medical attention, medical health care. That's really, really upsetting to me, guys. I hear that, and I'm, like, super upset to hear that, because that's over half of these trans women who thought that getting their outside turned inside are now reporting that they're having pain that requires medical management. Medical management. In other words, they are now a lifetime victim of big pharma because they had the idea and were not properly informed that this could be a possibility. And now the information is starting to come out. And when you start looking at this and you start realizing that this is what they're targeting kids with, that this is a possibility, that they're trying to lower the age limit from consenting adults who did not get informed consent to children. We've got a major problem on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. So the next one, dilation-related concerns, 37. So that's 46.3%. Bleeding from 34. So that's 42.5%. Like, the top three is pain, dilation-related concerns, because bro information here, full disclosure. There we go. I keep saying bro tip, but no, it's full disclosure. When you get that outside turned inside, you're actually creating an open wound that will have to be dilated a minimum of once a week for the rest of your life. And if you don't, it can actually close off and cause a pocket of infection, which can lead to sepsis and kill you. So you just went through a procedure that is literally going to make you a big pharma client for the rest of your life. Now, some people are okay with accepting that. You know, if these people are fully informed and they're willing to do that for the rest of their life, then you know what? You do you. I don't really care. If you're spending your money, your time, and your energy on these things, then I really don't care. If you're happy and everything works out for you, then I really don't care. It's not hurting me. Like you were talking about the first hour with Chris, it's not causing me any problems. It's not harming me. I have no contractual obligation with you. You do what you see fit. If it makes you happy, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, whatever, but I wouldn't go through and do something like that. But if you're happy, then be happy. Anyway, coming back to this, Sexual function concerns. So 27 people reported, which is 33.8%. Vaginal discharge, and not the female vaginal discharge that's unhealthy and it shouldn't be happening kind of thing. 26% or 26 people reported this, which is 32.5%. Vaginal tightness, which is 23 people, which is 28.7%. Urinary issues. In other words, you can't pee properly anymore. 18 people, which is 18.8%. Hair in vagina. In other words, when they turn it from the outside in, it's not supposed to have hair. And depending on how you do it and where the hair is, because, sorry, fellas, some of y'all have, like, hair growing right on the member. When you turn that inside out or, you know, you get a little bit of skin on the inside, yes, there can actually be hair that grows inside there. It's not supposed to be. And in women, it really doesn't unless you have, like, some really weird genetic abnormality. But this is a possibility when you're fiddling with things that aren't supposed to be fiddled with because this is the way they are. So, yeah, hair and vagina, which is 10 people, 12.5%. Anatomic irregularity, which is 10 people, 12.5%. So, in other words, it doesn't look like it should. And a lot of times they just do another surgery to correct that. Then you have that Barbie pouch, quote, unquote. So mental health concerns, 10 people, 12.5%. And I'm going to imagine a lot of that is coming from the surgery going wrong. In other words, having things like pain, having things like bleeding, having things like urinary issues, because everything was fine and you just had body dysmorphia. And then you went through the surgery thinking that it was going to fix everything, and now you've got chronic problems that you're having to chronically deal with every single day that you wouldn't be going through if you would have just left things alone. So now here you are still with your, you know, dysphoria, and then you've also got physical problems, you know, that is going to lead to your mental health. Because let's just be honest with ourselves, people with chronic pain also have a lot of mental health issues because it sucks being in pain when you wake up from the morning to when you go to bed, or you're trying to live your life in this 9-to-5 constant, you need to be productive society that doesn't let you sleep when it comes to things like bills. I mean, this whole thing with COVID and stuff going, COVID going down, everybody was losing their jobs. Everybody was being told to stay home. Oh, we're going to save everybody, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, bills aren't getting paid. Oh, yeah, it worked for 2 weeks. And the mortgage started to climb. The bills are starting to climb. And, oh, yeah, we're going to do these temporary measures where, you know, you can just make payments and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, you have the mortgages, these sneaky bastards, where they're taking your payment and putting it at the end of your mortgage payment and then counting it as a skipped payment. And they're putting it on your record. So meanwhile, you're thinking that you're being saved by, oh, I'm going to get a payment plan and blah, blah, blah. But meanwhile, this is wrecking your credit score. So your credit score, which is, you know, the social ID credit score, you know, the social score that they're gearing you up for, which is what they're doing in China right now, FYI. Actually, this is wild. Quick thing. I actually found this on TikTok, and I posted it to my Odyssey because, you know, there's a lot of these things that get removed like a day or two later. But there was this woman, I'm not sure where she was from, but I know she was in the States, and she went to this gas station, and in order for her to be able to buy a drink out of this gas station, like the glass door, she had to put her driver's license or government-issued ID into this little machine for them to read it. And then she was allowed to pick a drink, which one she wanted. You know, like a vending machine? It was like a vending machine. She had to, like, pick which one she wanted, and then, like, she could open the door. But she had to provide her ID first in order to be able to get a freaking drink. Like, it was so mind-boggling. And I'm pretty sure it was in the U.S. I'm not exactly, like, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure. But I literally couldn't even believe it was real. But it's like, no, this is real. This is actually happening. For real, in real time, this is happening, that this is what they're pushing you towards. So the banks are going to keep collecting, and, you know, you're left, you know, in chronic pain. So, like, these people, it doesn't surprise me that they have something like mental health issues if they're in chronic pain, because that's just how society works in Canada now. You know, they're pushing to be able to clock you off if you've got mental health issues. They're just, right now, they're starting with people who are, quote-unquote, terminal. But they're pushing for people with, you know, quite severe mental health issues, and this is a eugenics thing that's going on. That, by the way, this was happening in Nazi Germany. Talked about this last week, but check out Action T4. They started this with children. Children who had disabilities that were mentally disabled, physically disabled, they started killing them, and then they moved on to adults and seniors specifically. And actually, funny thing, if you've read the book Influence, The Power of Persuasion, it actually talks about in that book specifically that when they hand out surveys, that's actually one of the ways that they get you. So when you fill out a survey from like Health Canada or anything like that, they actually get you that way, that they get the surveys back from you, and then they say, oh, they make policies that's in your best interest. Nah, man, they get your surveys back, and they get the information on how to get you. And that's exactly what they did in Nazi Germany, is they actually handed out surveys to, you know, seniors and blah, blah, blah. They had to fill out these surveys, et cetera, et cetera. Then, under the guise of that this was for public health, they actually went out, and they actually took the seniors and the disabled people and stuff like that. And they told them, oh, yeah, we're going to take care of you, blah, blah, blah. Nah, man. They took them. They snatched them away from their homes, and they euthanized them. No joke. It actually happened. Because when you look at things like the Lebensborn program and how they were working on eugenics and breeding the desired traits of men and women with no health problems, no health history, specific lineages, et cetera, then they took those children, the Lebensborn children, they raised them by the state, and nobody ever really heard what happened to the Lebensborn children because it just kind of disappeared. They just kind of adopted them out. They just kind of destroyed the documents and et cetera, et cetera. You can actually go and, like, you look up on YouTube, look at some of these, the children and grandchildren of the people who were, you know, brought up in this Lebensborn program, and look at their stories. You know, it's quite wild when you actually start looking at these things, and it's, to be honest, quite disgusting how they treat, and I think they, you know, even when they treat animals like this, to be entirely honest, I know it's like, you know, the rules of nature that, you know, this is just how nature is, but, like, I really don't like the way they do that in nature either. You know, in breeding, like, if you're a human being and you're breeding animals for a desired trait, it's one thing for it to happen naturally in nature. It's another thing for a human to do that for a desire to be able to, you know, commercialize and turn these critters into property. It just really strikes me. And being a farmer, I know that's hypocritical to say those kinds of things, but it just really breaks my heart that we view beings that way. That it's just like, you know, we first, you know, in order to be able to view ourselves that way, we first have to look at the beings that we're trying to enslave and control on this planet to even be able to look at them that way, to look at ourselves that way. We will never be free until we actually start getting respect for plants and for animals, you know, other beings with levels of consciousness that, you know, is, we seem to think that these beings are not conscious, and granted, they're not conscious in the same way that we are. They're more on a primitive, fundamental level, but that doesn't mean they're any less conscious. In fact, if you go to TikTok, I'm not telling you to go to TikTok, you might even be able to Google this, but there's a dog on this TikTok profile, and her name is Bunny. Now, the owner of Bunny, if you pay attention to people who do this with their dogs, they take these little buttons and then they teach the animals what these buttons mean. So, like, you push a button that says eat, you push a button that says outside, you know, they start with this. Then there's some people out there that take it next level. They start teaching these animals, you know, things like verbs, adverbs, not just nouns, but like verbs and adverbs. And then there's some people, like this lady who's taught Bunny, that, like, her whole floor is covered with multiple little pad things. And then they start talking about, you know, philosophical concepts. And she actually asked this dog, you know, what am I? You know, and the dog says, you're human. And she's like, what is Bunny? Well, Bunny is human. Well, what is Charlie or whatever the other dog's name is? Well, the other dog is a dog. And it's just like, you think it's funny, but the dog is being serious. Like, every time she asks this dog a question, dog actually thinks about it. And the fact that the dog is telling her that I'm not a dog, I'm human, but yet the dog recognizes what an animal is. Because when she asks the dog, what are we? We're an animal. Well, what is Bunny? Bunny is human. You know, and the fact that, like, this dog is sitting there saying it's human, and apparently, I don't know if this is true, this is just a claim, allegedly, that this dog was actually on antidepressants because this dog is having, like, an existential crisis, so to speak, that the dog is realizing that it's a dog and it's not a human. It's just like, you know, when you start realizing that animals can, to a certain degree, whether they care or not, but some more than others, that, like, when they're just like humans in these ways, that you have some people that are philosophical and they want to explore more and they want to dig deeper into knowledge and they have a hunger for knowledge and to grow and to learn and things like that. And there's other human beings that just don't. They're just satisfied with life as it is. They never want to learn. They always want to be treated like a slave. They don't care, blah, blah, blah. And it's like when you start thinking that, like, oh, my goodness, like humans, you know, animals can actually experience this too. That is just like, it's so mind-blowing to realize that, like, you know, if we're going to change, we need to change our fundamental understanding of reality and things like that. So coming back to fundamental understanding of reality, going back to this chart, we have things like loss of depth. So when they turn it inside out, it's supposed to be a certain length and it can actually shorten. 8 people reported that, which is 10%. Maldor, I'm not exactly even sure what that is, but 8 people reported that, 10%. Vaginal canal closure, so in other words, it just closes off altogether. They've got to go in back in and they got to reoperate to open it up, or just go in and take it out altogether. 8 people, which is 10%. Numbness, which is 3 people, 3.8%. And vaginal dryness, which is 2.5%. It's sad to see what we're really truly doing to the trans community. I actually watched a small clip on TikTok from Trigonometry. This, I think her name was Helen Joyce. She was actually talking about how specifically she had a client come in that, how did that story go? My goodness, I'm trying to think. Rack my brain. She had somebody come in and, there we go. This woman had bulimia. She had, body, you know, dysmorphia. She wanted to be skinny, blah, blah, blah. She ended up in the hospital a few times because she didn't want to eat, blah, blah, blah. So she had actually found on the internet, mastectomies, mastectomies, whatever they're called, where you get your breasts removed. I can't think about it right now. Anyway, she thought that that was the answer, that if she could get rid of her boobs, that it could help her feel better about her body, blah, blah, blah. Then she came across being trans, and then she decided that she was trans. She went to her parents with this, and her parents really didn't care. They're like, you know what, you've been in the hospital a few times. We're going to support you in whatever journey that you have that is going to bring you back to, like, you know, being healthy in mind. That we just want to see our daughter essentially grow and, you know, be healthy again. We don't want you to suffer anymore. So whatever you think is best, we're just going to support you. So she's going through, she gets her breasts removed, she's getting on testosterone, she's getting ready for a phalloplasty, going through all the steps, blah, blah, blah. She didn't go through it yet, but she was getting ready for it. And she came across a forum online that was talking about, like, you know, having your lady bits removed because of things like cancer, because of things like disease, et cetera, et cetera. And she had asked the question, you know, and these people were very supportive of her. Like, they were like, you know, like, we've gone through this. If you have any questions, any concerns, like, you know, like, let us know. We're willing to talk to you about it. You know, you should be able to do whatever you want with your body. It's your body. You're going to have to live with it at the end of the day kind of thing. So, like, whatever choice you want to make, as long as you're informed and you're supported, you should be able to make that choice, which is freaking awesome. It's absolutely awesome. So going forward, she asked herself, you know, like, why, what was that question? You know, how would a surgery that's only done on women make me a man? And it just kind of clicked on her. That's just like, you know what? Maybe this isn't the right path for me. Maybe I'm not a man. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm just a gay woman. You know, things like that. Like, why do I have to look like a man, you know, in order to be gay? And all these other questions. And just, it was an entire shift in her thinking. Anyway, she had come to this doctor, and she was telling her about this and all this other stuff. And this is not the only case that she had that was just like, but anyway, this doctor was just like, holy crap. they're sterilizing gay people. They're sterilizing gay people. And just like that whole realization that it's just like this is an agenda to sterilize the quote-unquote undesirables of the world, because a lot of them require medical intervention in order to be able to, like, you know, you have two gay men, they want to adopt. Okay, well, you can adopt. I think gay men should be able to adopt, and you can disagree with me all day long. I mean, there are cases like that one that just popped up recently where those two gay men had adopted those boys and they were pimping them out, sex trafficking their sons, which is so next level disgusting. I mean, you can crap on that all day long, but guess what? Straight people do that too all day long. In fact, way more straight people do it than gay people. So far as I know, I could be incorrect in those statistics. Either way, it happens. And it's truly disgusting. It is so unbelievably disgusting to harm a child, to be a child molester, and to do those things to a child. It's just, it's so, I don't even know. You've got to be, your mind must be hell to actually go out of your way and do something like to a child. Your mind must be hell. And I would never wish that on anybody, just to have your mind be that messed up, and like to have to take the action. That's the biggest thing, is that having your mind messed up is one thing, but to actually go forward and take that action and bring the Trinity into fruition, to actually manifest that, it is causing harm. And you're causing harm to a child who are then going to have to go through their life. And having been traumatized like that, you know, it's not their fault. If you've ever been sexually assaulted as a child, raped as a child, you know, anything like that, I'm just here to tell you, it's not your fault. It is absolutely not your fault. Never, ever, ever blame a child for having that kind of abuse subjected onto them. You can say anything all day long, but guess what? Those are the groomers that did that to these kids, and they're going to realize later in life that this did happen to them. And it is going to break them. If they're not already broken, it is going to break them. And it's going to take a long time of going back into that childhood trauma and trying to rewire the neural pathways in your brain and to come to terms with that. It's difficult, time consuming. And in the meantime, you're also hurting people in the meantime because you're traumatized, because hurt people hurt people. Now, that doesn't give you the right to hurt other people because you were hurt, but it's also a deeper understanding that this might be why. And when you can actually come to that understanding yourself, that, you know, this is why you're doing these things to these other people, you start doing that shadow work and you start looking at yourself and you start realizing this is unacceptable, that I can't treat people this way. Things start to change. But, you know, that's again to say that, like, you know, gay men should be able to adopt. If you're two people that have your head on straight that are going to raise decent human beings, or two gay women, you should be able to adopt kids. Why not? Why not? What is the harm in making sure that a child is loved and raised, to make sure they're fully functional human beings, to make sure that they understand, you know, the components of natural law, to be able to, you know, go forward and do the things that they enjoy in life, be a musician, be a doctor, be a teacher, you know, and be able to raise their own families. Or, you know, if you don't want to have a family, that's fine too. Some people just don't want to have families, and that's perfectly okay. You know, as long as you're doing it, that, like, that's what you truly, really, truly, honestly want, you know, you should be able to do that. I don't see any problem with that, you know. Or, like, the thing is, when it comes to, you know, medical intervention, and when it comes to surrogates, you know, there's medical intervention there, and there's a lot of money to be made with that. So I really don't see why they're trying to sterilize these people specifically, other than to maybe slow down the process of breeding. And this is actually something that was really interesting when I was watching Blair White, because Blair White is a trans woman, and I love Blair. I don't agree with all of her opinions, obviously, but there's a lot of things that she talks about that, you know, I really do, you know, I can understand, and I do agree with. She seems like a really good person. Honestly, I might reach out to Blair one day and have her on my show, because, you know, that's somebody that I could really, truly, honestly see myself being friends with, because I really do like a lot of their opinions. Again, I don't agree with all of them, but a lot of things, like, I could see myself having fun with somebody like Blair, not sexual fun. If you're listening to this and you're like, ooh, having fun, you freak. I'm talking about somebody I could actually have a coffee with and, like, actually enjoy their presence kind of thing. Not that I don't enjoy presence with a lot of people, but, you know, we all gravitate to people that tend to be a little bit more like us in certain aspects and yada yada. Because, you know, like, well, essentially, you know, come to, you know, find like, and et cetera, et cetera. But I remember watching a video, because I had actually watched Blair for quite some time at this point already, and she wanted to have kids, her own kids. She wanted to get a surrogate. She wanted to have her own kids, blah, blah, blah. But in order to be able to do that, because she had been on estrogen for so long, she actually had to go off the estrogen in order to be able to donate sperm, to be able to have her own kids. And, like, she was ready to do that financially, find a surrogate and blah, blah, blah. Problem was, she was never informed specifically that having been on estrogen for years, it actually renders you sterile. It actually renders you sterile. Not all trans people are sterile, but in her case, she was actually sterile, and she was never told that, that was even a possibility. That was never even a thought in her mind, because had she been told that, she would have saved her sperm and then gone with a surrogate later. She would have saved it a lot earlier and gone with a surrogate later, but she was never told that. She was never told that there was a possibility that she could be sterile just a few years in. Not only that, going off of estrogen, you know, her hairline started to recede and all this other stuff. She started, though, getting, like, bad dysmorphia. So, like, all this work that I've done, all the suffering I've gone through and all this stuff in order to look the way I do, it's, like, it's starting to reverse by letting my natural... So anyway, it was just a mess. And I remember watching that video, and I remember, like, just being so upset for her that, like, you know, if the medical community is so know-it-all and we are supposed to be so accepting and et cetera, et cetera, why are these things not being told to trans individuals? Why are these things not being told to trans women? That's not informed consent. That's not informed consent at all. And that's disgusting, because these people go in thinking that they're going to be able to have a kid later in life only to be told, oh, hey, sorry, you can't have a kid. You're sterile now. And if you know, we should have told you sooner, but that's not the case. That's not the case at all. And same with trans men. You know, if you watch the What's a Woman documentary from Matt Walsh, it was actually a really interesting documentary to watch. There were certain aspects that I don't really agree about, but, you know, overall, you got the gist. And when that trans man came on there, and he was talking about, you know, I'll never be a biological male. I went through these surgeries, and I went through hormones and things, and it actually really messed me up to a point that I'm going to be a big pharma client for the rest of my life. And people need to know these things. They need to be given informed consent. Again, it comes back to informed consent. And this medical community, these sick buggers, they don't tell you what's actually going on. They don't give you informed consent, you know? It's really sad, and it's really frustrating that these trans people, in which was this woman she was talking about specifically, that, holy crap, they're sterilizing people. They're sterilizing gay people. They're sterilizing queer people. Just that realization that it's like, holy wow, you know, is this why they're going after kids the way they are? Is this why they're doing it? Because outside of that, I don't really see there's any other way they can really, truly, honestly do that outside of, like, you know, getting them with the pokes. And people were not comfortable poking their kids, at least the majority of people were not comfortable poking their kids with this gene therapy experiment that, you know, like, some did, which is unfortunate, in my opinion, because, you know, if the adults are experiencing this, what are the kids are going to be experiencing, that they're hitting them with this culture war and they're sterilizing them through puberty blockers, which they claim are reversible. That's not how this works. That's not how this works at all. You can't just hit them with puberty blockers and then 5 years' time just hit them with, you know, the testosterone and estrogen again and just restart the system. That's not how that works at all. The changes that you're doing are permanent, you know, and it's just like they're doing these to kids. They're messing these kids up, their mental health and blah, blah, blah. I think I truly, honestly do think that that's what they're targeting me with these kids with the depopulation agenda, between the pokes, between the food, between, you know, the hormones that they're giving to these kids, like if the whole point of all of this was to depopulate, and Bill Gates did like a thing on the screen where he was talking about if they can just get like the right, you know, medication or the right vaccine or whatever in place, that they can actually start to depopulate. And you can actually see that if you go type in like deer sterilization or whatever, just go to Google and type that in specifically, that they are working on vaccines to sterilize. I think it was in Minnesota or Montana or wherever, somewhere down in the States. I don't exactly remember where, but they were working on a vaccine to sterilize deer because these deer allegedly were becoming a problem. So then rather than allowing people to go out and shoot these deer and put food on the table and, you know, turn the skin into clothing and et cetera, their answer is allegedly to go and sterilize the deer. You know, screw all the starving people, because it's not like you don't have anybody that's starving in the community. That, you know, you could give this to a food bank or something like that. I'm sure there would be a butcher that would volunteer, because it's not like we don't have trophy hunters. I mean, this is why a lot of people crap and complain about hunting. It isn't even so much about the hunting itself, even though a lot of, you know, city slickers that don't understand what actually goes into preparing your own food, because they're so used to getting the food off the grocery store shelves that it's always going to be there. It's always going to be there. Well, guess what? It comes there from, you know, the work of farmers, you know, and on smaller scales, you know, hunters and foragers, those kinds of people. If you don't have those people doing the work, that food's not going to be there. So, you know, if at some point with all these farmers dropping dead and all, you know, the grand solar minimum, the pole shift and everything that's coming up, the way they're destroying the food, the way agriculture is destroying the soil, not permaculture, but the way modern agriculture is destroying the soil, causing nutrition deficiencies and blah, 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 another conversation for another time. If that food isn't on the shelf, you're done. You're done. I'm sorry to say, you're done. You will only last, you know, 2 to 4 weeks and you're over. That's it. Like, and starvation is an incredibly painful way to go. It is not a fun way to go. Very much not fun. But, you know, rather than getting these trophy hunters who really don't care about, you know, food preparation, they're just the city slicking yucks that go out and they just want to kill and shoot things, allow them to go out and do this. Let them go do this. And then when they're done, have them bring that food back to the community members and have that shared amongst community. I mean, you know, it's just like in places like Africa, everybody is so mad that these American hunters go over and they shoot lions and they shoot giraffes and all these yucking losers. I'm using really aggressive language here, but all these people that get upset that these American hunters go over and they pay the government and the local communities and stuff lots and lots of money. It's not like they just get on a plane, go out to the African Sahara and just shoot something and then walk away. They pay a lot of money to be there. They get licensing. They get tour guides, people who are trained and who are licensed. You know, licenses are nonsense in my opinion, but regardless, there's a process to this. And they take these people out and they, you know, they track and they guide them. And then these people shoot these animals and they don't take them. I mean, they get their trophy of their picture. Meanwhile, the food goes to the community. You know, it's just like, and I know there's like arguments that can be had that it's like, you know, it would be better for the community to do it themselves. However, you know, free food is free food. The American hunter gets to do what he wants. The locals get money and they get food. It's really that simple that it's like, you know, in a way it's a symbiotic relationship. I know you can argue that with all these other semantics and, you know, a lot of them are valid, whatever. That's not the point. But the point is that the government is going in and sterilizing deer rather than feeding people. If the deer are becoming a problem, shoot them and let people eat them. But no, instead they're going to scare you into this chronic wasting disease problem. Meanwhile, they're sterilizing the deer and killing the deer in a lot of places. We actually had a big issue here in Manitoba. Well, not here. I'm in Saskatchewan, but in Manitoba. Specifically because a bunch of the deer there was a deer that was diagnosed with chronic wasting disease. So they were actually going in and eliminating all of the deer out of the infected area for the next however many years. So it's just like, you know, what kind of a detriment is this going to do on, you know, the entire ecosystem, because where are all the animals that eat these animals going to go? You know, and how are you, the amount of resources that's going to be wasted to go in and make sure that there's no deer, that no moose, no elk, no nothing that goes into these areas. Like, I don't even think that's possible. I don't even think that's possible. Totally insane. Totally insane. And this is what they're working on, is to sterilize and depopulate. And for whatever purpose, again, you know, like, oh, there's too many people on the planet. Personally, I don't think there's too many people. According to economics, there's really not too many people. Sustainability-wise, there's really not too many people. It's just there's too many people in too many concentrated areas, like cities where you have an entire area that's poisoned instead of moving around. Now, see, this is the issue. Is, you know, because we have this economy, this capitalist system, and which is being shifted into this quasi-capitalist system, this crony capitalism, and pushing into this, you know, socialism, all of us, and capitalism, like oligarchy for all of them, kind of system where we're going to be fighting over peanuts, and we're going to have like an allotted amount that we're allowed to spend every month, that we're going to be in this caste system that you're not allowed to climb. You're not allowed to climb. You're going to have to stay where you are, and you're going to have to do your work. It's like Brave New World, where you're born an epsilon or whatever, you know, and then there's the beta, and then there's the alpha. You're born an epsilon. That, you know, you were literally created that way. You know, it's like the Hindi caste system that they're actually trying to get rid of in favor of capitalism, which has caused a lot of problems on the environment, blah, blah, blah. Another story for another time. We'll go over that with the permaculture stuff. But it's like you're not allowed to move out of your caste system. You're going to get an allotted amount a month, and you're going to be happy, and you're going to own nothing, and you're going to like it. I actually watched a TikTok last night specifically talking about these houses that are being specifically built to rent out. You're not allowed to own these houses. There's these, you know, they're being built to rent. And they're being owned by a very small minority amount of people. And a lot of people are abandoning private work in order to be able to work on these houses, because these built to rent houses are popping up such en masse because nobody can own anything anymore. You know, they're bringing the housing so expensive, and meanwhile your job, your 9-to-5 job, is barely even able to afford your rent, that how are you going to pay for a mortgage? Which is funny, because a lot of time the mortgages are actually less than the rent itself. So you have these rich people that go in, they buy up these houses, they charge you like, you know, $2,000 for rent for a house. Meanwhile, if you would have bought the house with the mortgage, it would have cost you like $1,400 or something, because when you're renting, you're paying for the mortgage and then some, plus the bills. Whereas if you're buying a house, you're actually paying less for the mortgage, and at the end of the day, you're actually like building your credit and blah, 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 again, you know, credit score, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not technically yours, but it's more yours than you renting it, if that makes sense. But this is what they're doing. You know, Klaus Schwab literally told us that we're going to own nothing and we're going to be happy. So we're going to have no choice, or at least we're going to be led to believe that we have no choice, because this is all a mind game. You're going to be told you have no choice because that's their property and none of them, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like it's all a mind game. And then as soon as people start understanding, you know, the basics and fundamentals of natural law, that it's just like, I don't want to own everything. I don't need to own everything. I just have my little bit, and this is what makes me happy, you know? And it's not to say that you can't pursue more. It's not to say that you can't have nice things or that you can't work with other people. It's like you see this in, like, programming and stuff all the time, computer programmers. You know, artists are freaking out and, you know, claiming each other's art as their own, and like, oh my goodness, if you have something that's even inspired by somebody else's stuff, it's like, oh, I deserve all the credit. Well, artists are fighting all the time, over whose art is whose. And now you've got the issue with the AI and this Lemura lens or whatever, that people were buying AI and it was actually stealing people's art, and they were paying for this art that was stolen from other people, and all these artists are up in arms. Meanwhile, you have computer programmers that they're just stealing each other's stuff. Well, they're just handing it away. They're just like, whatever, no biggie, you know? Like, let's just work together to build something even better. Like, why are we even fighting over this? Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, well, I saw a meme the other day. It was like, you know, these two artists are fighting over whose intellectual property is what. Meanwhile, you have these two programmers. They're just like, oh, nice programming, bro, or nice code, bro. And bro's just like, it's not mine. It's just like they're so willing to just admit, you know, and be honest. I'm not saying all of them, but a good portion of them that they're just like, they're willing to admit and just be honest that it's just like they're working together to build something greater. Meanwhile, all these other people are arguing over the semantics of money, the mon I, you know, and we'll get into that another time going forward. But, you know, it's really sad to see. It's really sad to see because money is becoming less and less useful, less and less worth more, that, you know, everybody is fighting more and more over it. And unfortunately, going forward, whether people like it or not, the crypto is coming. The crypto system is coming. So you might as well, at this point, start investing in things like gold and investing in things like, you know, I wouldn't say so much Bitcoin, like I'm no financier or anything like that, but things like Avalanche, the smaller cryptos, and start diversifying your assets. Start diversifying your investments because, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, your 9-to-5 job that's coming up here in the very near future is not going to sustain you. You're going to be forced to work for a slave labor wage that's going to just barely pay for the things you want. You're going to have like an allotted amount that you're going to have every month, and it doesn't matter how much you work, you're going to have that same amount. It's going to be like a cheap salary that you're going to be expected to work like a slave for your salary. And if you stop working, you don't get your allotted amount per month. And don't you dare think about anything other than what you're supposed to be thinking, which is shown on the TV. Because mark my words, if your credit score, your social credit score goes down, you're also going to be cut off. That was actually a big problem in China, is that, you know, if your social credit score starts going too low in some of these areas, that you're actually not even allowed to leave the country. Like, not only do you have to apply for a passport and do all this stuff, but your credit score has to be high enough. You have to be a good enough Chinese citizen in order to leave your own freaking country. Like, do you know how scary that is? And all of this is subjective behavior and knowledge that they push on you. And if you deny it at any point, you're going to get... If you're into anime, before we go, because we're going to get going here in 2 minutes, we're almost done for tonight. We've got 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. If you're into anime, watch the anime Psychopath. That one blew my mind. Or if you like reading manga or anything like that. So, like, you know, you can say, well, that's a child's show or those are child's comic books or something. There's a lot of allegories that are in really good mangas and really good animes, and Psychopath is one of them. If you're listening to my show right now and you can even borderline comprehend anything that I'm saying, if you watch that anime, go to Crunchyroll, subscribe to Crunchyroll. It's like $10 or $12 a month. Go watch that anime, Psychopath, PSYCHO-PASS. It will blow your mind. I literally was so taken aback because I'm looking at the comments when I finish watching this, the end comments, and people are like, I don't understand what's going on here. This is like just weird. Like what's going on with this show? You know, this is just a weird show. And like, I'm sitting here just like my entire mind was just completely blown. That it's just like, wow, like this is scary how real this could be and how close we're getting to how real this is. So anyway, that's what I had to say for tonight. Again, you can reach out to Chris at johnnyporoshenko@gmail.com. I'll put that in the show description actually right now here. I don't have time. I'll edit it afterward. So I will see you guys again next week. Have a very super happy fun time Friday, and thanks for tuning in today. Bye-bye.